Good afternoon. This is Janae, and I think you just heard our conversations. I had the mics up. That's half the fun. Tony Walker, as I said, is the president and CEO of ComfortCare Senior Services, and that's an agency that provides non-medical in-home care for seniors, and that actually enables them to live in the comfort and security of their own homes. And he started ComfortCare in January 2003, providing support to clients throughout the county. In addition to working with seniors, ComfortCare provides respite for families of persons with developmental disabilities such as autism, cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, and seizure disorders. As an approved supplier of services to the San Andreas Regional Center, and it's a family business, and he operates it with his daughter, Victoria, who specializes in recruiting caregivers and scheduling the clients. Interestingly enough, prior to starting ComfortCare, Tony spent 30 years in the high-tech world in a variety of sales and marketing positions with domestic and international corporations, most recently as vice president of marketing for Pericom Semiconductor in San Jose. He's British. He actually moved to New York from his native England in 1978 and relocated to Santa Cruz in 1984. Welcome, Tony. First of all, I want you all to know that last night I spoke to him on the phone and asked him if he had any music that he wanted to play before coming on. He said the Rolling Stones, and I said, gee, I was thinking of Enya or Existence and Beautiful World, the Rolling Stones, and I want to ask you, why the Rolling Stones?
Well, I'm a rock and roller at heart.
You know, yes.
I spent many years, you know, following the Rolling Stones. I go back to the times in England when they were pretty much an unknown band. In fact, an amusing story, one of my best friends went to school with Mick Jagger in Dartford, Kent.
Wow.
A long time ago, and they played on the same rugby team.
So, oh, what fun.
Which is like playing American football without pads and helmets, which is a pretty crazy sport. But And Mick Jagger went on to, get into music and play in bands. And he used to play in local pubs in Guildford and on Eel Pie Island in sort of southwest of London. And so they were available and accessible before their first hit record came out.
Wow.
They used to play a lot of Chuck Berry kind of music, which was pretty new to us in those days. But it was kind of a lot of fun.
You know, you're giving me a little bit of history, musical history. I was a wee one and just loved the Rolling Stones. I had no idea. I'd like to know more about that, but that's another time.
Well, I was lucky. I grew up at a time in England when the Beatles, you know, were just coming about. The whole British invasion thing was starting up, that groundswell, and every week a new band came. It was a new hit record. It was just an awesome time.
So creative.
I guess it would have been like being in the San Francisco Bay Area 10 years later when, you know, when the flower power thing
was
going.
Haight-Ashbury.
Yeah.
I miss that too.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, and first question I want to ask you is, I'm curious, how did you go from 30 years in high tech to working with seniors and caring for them in their homes? What a jump.
It's quite a jump, and it's actually quite a shock to a lot of people. My friends from the old days in the electronics industry are still in a state of shock 7 years later. But the explanation is kind of simple. It's my wife's fault.
Your wife's fault?
Absolutely. Totally her fault. It's
and
her
how
idea.
Is this?
Well, it was all her idea. I kind of retired from my 30 years, you know, time off for good behavior. Played a lot of golf one summer, and she said, no, you need to do something. And so I said, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. I could play some more golf. She said, no, you need to do something a bit more useful with your life. And she had, when my daughters had got older, she'd gone back to school, ended up on a track going to San Jose State, and then she did a master's at Santa Clara in counseling psychology. And on the way, she learned about the senior demographic. And then around the same time, her father had passed away back in England. She'd gone back to help her mother, who was not well, you know, as a result of that. And her and her brother had hired an agency to provide some care for her mother.
Yes.
So she came back and said, this is something you should really look into, the combination of helping seniors, being helpful in the community, and this whole demographic of the aging of the population.
The baby boomers, we're coming up.
We are coming up. Yeah, I'm kind of one of the early wave of the baby boomers.
Well, I'm right behind you.
And it's going to get pretty crowded before.
It is.
So, yeah, I put it all down to Tina's recommendation to look into it. I did some research and some studying. And while we originally thought about anything to do with seniors, we homed in on this particular idea as a way of helping in the community. So,
yes.
And it was an aspect of helping people that we could get into relatively quickly. You know, without having to go through long, extended building permits, licensure that you might have to do if you set up a nursing home or an assisted living facility. And we also realized that people wanted to actually live in their own homes. They wanted to stay in their own homes as long as possible.
They do.
And the service we provide enables them to do that right the way through to end-of-life situations through hospice. Mm-hmm. You know, there's many things that can be done.
And that's what I love, hospice work.
Well, it takes a special heart and a special caring to be able to do that. Not everybody can cope with that. But to help somebody on their journey, you know, is just it's just a tremendous experience to observe that. And, you know, the dignity.
And to be a part of it.
The dignity and grace that some people have is just amazing.
Yeah.
And then the flip side of that, of course, is that sometimes our older friends may be a little resentful that they can't do what they've always been able to do in their lives.
And
so they get frustrated. And so, you know, I tell families that we have 90-year-olds that have 2-year-old temper tantrums. And we have 2-year-olds that have 2-year-old temper tantrums.
Wisdom of an elder,
well,
too. Not 2 years old, but five.
Because we work with young children as well as older people, yes. I tell people we catch them coming and going.
Sure.
And that helps people's, you know, settle at ease and know that we have that range of experience. And also the fact that when we have little ones, we help them with their diapers. And sometimes the older ones need a little help in that direction as well. And when they realize that it's, you know, it's life's full circle, you know, it's more acceptable and it's okay. You know, there used to be a stigma about those kind of things. But nowadays people are starting to realize that it's okay. You know, whatever happens, happens. And we just make you as comfortable as possible.
More and more as we educate people.
Yeah.
And as we're getting older and the population is, and healthcare is so expensive, many are looking for alternative ways to keep the cost down.
Right.
And so we know something. So how did you become Comfort Care? I understand it's a franchise sorts.
Well, part of my research, you know, I figured out that the business model to set up and run a home care agency is relatively straightforward. However, you know, in developing documentations and policies and procedures, there's inevitably a time delay to do that. And, you know, as somebody coming from the high-tech world into a totally alien subject, you know, a totally new field, inevitably I would
Thanks
make
to
some
your
mistakes,
wife.
You know. Thank you, Tina. I would have inevitably made some mistakes along the way. And a very good friend of mine, who I happened to have been playing golf with one day, said to me, have you thought about franchising? I went, no, thinking at the time that franchise was the San Francisco 49ers or Burger King. And it never occurred to me how many businesses, and I'm now franchise. More sensitive to the idea, but you drive around town and there are many, many operations that are franchised. You know, the mm-hmm. what are now UPS postal stores used to be, you know,
the postal
mailboxes, etc. was a franchise. You know, a whole load of things
McDonald's
like that.
McDonald's
well,
is a franchise
of
sorts
Subway,
too. But...
You know, it's a whole bunch of these things. And so once I realized that that might be a way to get to market faster, you mm-hmm. know, to get to providing services faster mm-hmm. by teaming up with some people that had the prior experience. And also gave me a confidence that if I ran into a problem or an issue with one of the care staff or a client, I could pick the telephone up and talk to somebody back in headquarters that's
backup.
Been there, done that.
Yes.
And that really, really helped. And I know I was fairly fortunate. I found Comfort Care as a relatively new franchise entity. In fact, we were office number 7 in the whole country at the time.
Wow.
And the first in California. And now there are over 120 offices 7 years later. So it's a very... You know,
so you probably helped fine-tune their operations,
absolutely.
Too.
And, you know, I've won a couple of... blown my own horn here. I won a couple of sure. awards for marketing ingenuity and...
With your background, too.
And it
would be a good
match.
The people
I deal with at Comfort Care are willing to listen to new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
One of the disadvantages of the big established franchises like Burger King is you wake up one day and they decide they want to start making frozen yogurt. They send you a bill for $300,000 for a frozen yogurt machine and off you go. You have no choice. You're fixed into a very tight box. But Comfort Care has a much more elastic model. They're willing to adapt to the differences in different communities mm-hmm. in the country. Santa Cruz itself is a very unique community.
In what way? How is it unique in terms of the service?
Well, I was thinking more in terms of the people, but then how we administer the service, you know, fits into that uniqueness. But an example would be fundamentally, home care is a relatively expensive proposition. So it would be very easy to say, well, the most affluent 10% of the community can afford our services. That's who we're going to concentrate on working with. But we chose not to do that. We made a conscious decision at the beginning that we wanted to work with as broad a cross-section of the community as possible. So in addition to working with the persons that are most affluent that can afford our services, we became an approved provider of services for Santa Cruz County for various programs they provide for lower income, less advantaged people.
So would that be Medi-Cal, and would that be the provider with the providing the service or paying for it? Medi-Cal and Medi-Cruz or indirectly?
Indirectly, yes. There's, unfortunately, as we all know, that there are many things wrong with the healthcare system that we have in this country. And one of them happens to be that they don't Medicare, Medi-Cal, and the major medical insurance companies do not reimburse for home care services such as the ones we provide.
I didn't know that.
But the county actually can provide resources from what's called a Medicare waiver program. It's a special program that's federally managed and the state supports and the counties also support. But there's money that's channeled through those programs that can be provided to assist families that need help
Wonderful.
Of all income or personal circumstances. And then to further broaden our support for the community, we ended up working with the San Andreas Regional Center you mentioned in the introduction,
yes.
where they provide help for families that have persons with developmental disabilities. And a developmental disability can be autism, cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, mental retardation, or seizure disorders. Those are the 5 covered conditions from the Regional Center program
mm-hmm.
that is funded by the state of California.
Mm-hmm.
We're very fortunate in California. This is a unique program. There's no program like it anywhere else in the country. It's a state program. And people move from all over the country to try and tap into this resource because it provides a tremendous amount of help for families with persons with those kind of disabilities. So we are approved to be what's called a respite service provider. So respite would be a relief or a break for the family members who are the primary caregivers for the
yes.
person. And so we would go in as essentially professional babysitters for the very young ones
uh-huh.
or professional buddies for the older persons. for example, yesterday we started a new case helping a lady of 37 years who we are going to provide respite for her mother, who's her primary caregiver. So yesterday we picked her up for after her work project, and our caregiver took her swimming, went to a meeting with one of the other service providers, and then took her home afterwards. And they were going to hang out at the mall on the way. So, you know, it 4 hours of time where mum could go take care of things for mum.
What a relief.
And her daughter, 37-year-old daughter, who is developmentally disabled, had somebody professionally and responsibly trained to be able to help with them. And so...
Wow.
The whole concept was to be able to provide services for as broad a section of the community as possible, not just the most affluent 10% who, you know, could afford the premier services.
Yeah, and the premier services are expensive. And this is just a little divergence. You're British, and I know that many of us are coming along, the baby boomers, and we are going to saturate our system. I'm a little concerned about that. And how does this system in England work?
It's a great question, and I love the opportunity to share a little experience and knowledge about it. Having moved to this country in 1978, my personal experience as being in the national health system, as it's referred to in England, is limited. But I have a 98-year-old mother who lives in England and is now a recipient of help from the British National Healthcare System. Now, she's 98 years old.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
You have
it's
good
pretty
genes.
Pretty scary that I'm going to be around that long, so I'm going to have to look after myself. So mother's 98 years old, and up until 18 months ago, she lived independently in her own apartment. But two, three hospitalizations later, she finally realized that she had to do something different. And so with a little prompting, but mainly in her own decision, she agreed to go into a residential setting. And in England, they have a slightly different model than we have here, but one of the models they have is a combination between assisted living and skilled nursing in the same unit. So she's moved in. She was taken out, you know, from the hospital by a service support team. They took her and visited. She was able to, you know, check the place out. Agreed that it would be a good place to go try, and she moved in.
Did you go to England when she was
interestingly
making the transition?
No, I let her make her own decision, and then after she made the decision,
great,
I went over and helped her close up her apartment and took care of her affairs.
Sure.
But the facility that she's in is an assisted living. It has full nursing, RN support 24/7. She can stay there throughout end of life.
Wow.
They can provide, you know, basic medical care the same way as they can in a skilled nursing facility here. If she needs hospitalization, that still happens.
Free of charge.
Well, that's the interesting point. How much does she pay for this? The answer is zero.
Yeah.
Now, zero isn't quite the answer. This is not free healthcare that is often misunderstood.
Taxes, no doubt.
She's paid taxes her entire life. She's put into the kitty. Now it's her time to get out.
As have we.
Well,
we
haven't
get
in this
back
country.
In that way.
Well, we haven't put into the kitty at the same level that the people in Europe have put into the kitty at their end. Taxes have always been higher in the United Kingdom and Europe.
What percentage of their income, as a general rule, would you say goes towards social services?
I'm really not familiar enough to answer that question directly, but a simple analogy might be if we think of tax rates here being 25%, they're more like 35 or 40%.
I see.
I mean, it's that kind of difference.
But they're taken care of.
Well, that's the point.
And some have subsidized housing as well as subsidized education.
Well, my mother had essentially subsidized housing when she retired at 60 years old. She had worked all her life up until that time. She then moved into what in England is referred to as a council flat. So it's basically a bit like the sort of assisted housing, you know, units that the city of Santa Cruz provides for residents. And it's very common in England. This kind of whole families, you know, can get accommodation that way. She moved into that, you know, set up, and she lived there for 30 odd years. And she received a pension. And she lived on a pension, you know, that she'd earned from all her years of working. Now she's in this assisted living community. They've essentially taken a pension away. It's a bit like taking away your Social Security here. But they leave her with $25 a week spending money, mm-hmm. which is more than she needs. She has full board and lodging. Full board and lodging.
And she's not going to be traveling at 98.
She has a single room. Well, the other difference is that she was allowed to keep the equivalent of $25,000 in her cash kind of liquid accounts. Here, in order to qualify for the state-supported program, you have to give up everything but
$2,000. $2,000. My father almost, made sure he didn't go through that.
But the system is $25,000, which meant she did not have, she still has, if she wants it, the resource to go do something special. She doesn't want to, but
bit of security.
My mother's a sweetheart. She insists on giving me £20 every time I go visit her. And I'm 60 years old, I used to give it back to her, and she got upset with me. So then I used to argue, and she got upset. So now I just say, thank you, Mother, and I put it in my pocket.
Oh, Tony.
This is the way she is. But she has her own room. It's a private room. It's about 30 or 40 people in this. It's an old converted country home in rural fields out of the window, kind of setting in, beautiful English countryside. And it doesn't cost her anything. Here, people could pay $5,000 or $6,000 a month for something similar.
Easily, depending on where you are in the States.
Well, the system here in the United States is very cost effective if you can guarantee you're going to die when you're 70 years old without any illness very quickly.
Yes.
Right? Because it doesn't cost you anything to do that.
So you're kind of given the boot early, I suppose.
Guarantee that, you don't need to save, you don't need a retirement plan, you don't
but
need insurance. Nobody can. That's the ridiculous part.
No, and there's fear
of it.
Around that and anxiety, you go bankrupt, and what can you do?
Well, the system is
lose
geared
everything
around
that. You saved.
And nobody can do
it is
that.
Geared
it's
around
a,
it.
It's a completely ridiculous concept. What most seniors fear today is outliving their resources.
Not just seniors, particularly seniors, but all of us are, because we could be wiped out easily with any kind of terminal, not even terminal illness.
Well, okay, a minor aside, but on the subject of healthcare.
Sure.
A young lady that used to work for me back in the electronics industry who happened to get partnered up with an English guy who also used to work for me. So, very romantic time at Toshiba, but anyway.
Toshiba.
Oops. Anyway, that's where we used to work. He moved back to Europe. She ended up moving over there with him. She needed back surgery because she'd had an accident when she was a teenager. And she's like 50 years old now. She figured out, because it was a pre-existing condition, after she had left the corporate world, she couldn't get health insurance in the United States.
Because they're not willing to bargain for that.
Pre-existing condition.
Yeah.
And she needed back surgery because she was in pain and agony. She was convinced that had she have gone through the surgery here, it would have taken all of her life savings and the property that she owned in San Jose to pay for it. She went to England, 6 months to establish residency, and she had back surgery.
6 months?
It only took her 6 months to establish residency.
Anyone listening to the show,
yeah, if you
take
went back
note.
Surgery, go live in England for 6 months.
England,
and you can be taken care of.
For healthcare.
There you go. Whoops.
Costa Rica for dental care.
I didn't
care.
Tell them that. They won't let me back. If you don't go over there, whatever you do, don't mention my name. They'll never let me back. But Judy went over there and got taken care of. First-class hospital. The back surgery wasn't a success. But she wasn't. But it was a high risk thing anyway. I mean, she wasn't any worse. But she could have wiped out her entire resources and not got any improvement here.
I know. So
it's a very sad reflection on the system.
Oh,
if you visit England,
cases.
If you're a visitor and you break an arm, you go to the hospital emergency room. They treat you. They don't make a big fuss about it. They just take care of you, treat you.
And I think that's true of England too. And some European nations have private health care. They have private insurance companies, but they're strictly regulated.
They have private insurance in England. Senior executives, the most senior executives in companies, usually have a private insurance plan that sits on top. You still have to pay your national health dues. You choose not to use them.
The Cadillac of services, no
doubt. You go to the Rolls-Royce, actually.
Yes.
The Rolls-Royce of services. But, you would go to the first-class, hospitals and the first-class nursing homes and so forth and be pampered hand and foot. But it's not something average people
But the average is taken care of, the average person.
Generally speaking, yes. And the one big misnomer about the British healthcare system, and there's crazy talk about death panels and so forth when a national healthcare program was talked about here in the United States recently.
Yes, what can you say about that?
Well, Let me give you an example. My mother's 98 years old. Okay, she's just had brand new hearing aids paid for by the National Health Service, which aren't covered by Medicare here, as I understand.
No, they're not.
And would probably cost her $3,000. She got those for nothing. She's 98 years old. They've just given her brand new hearing aids. They provided her a special hearing device that enables her to listen to her telephone. It's a loop system, goes around her neck, plugged into the TV, and it sends a signal to her hearing aids so she can adjust the volume to suit herself, and she doesn't have the television blasting so the guy in the next room can hear it. Free.
Wonderful.
You know, she complained of a lump in her breast. So they're talking about, well, do you do surgery or not? She's thinking about surgery now. She's 98 years old.
It doesn't matter.
Anybody that turns around and says that a national health system is geared to not provide care once you get beyond 70, it's just scaremongering. It's
total, utter rubbish. And I've heard that about the English system, and I didn't. I'm great. I was going to ask you about that, and you've just addressed it.
Well, there's a lot of disinformation.
Is that what happens here, actually, that you kind of pushed along? I've seen that.
Well, but we also have. I mean, I visited one of my clients today who hopefully is coming out of the hospital tomorrow. Today is her 93rd birthday.
Oh.
She's a sweetheart of a lady, and she had a fall a few weeks ago, broke her shoulder.
Oh.
She was in Dominican for a little while. She's in the rehab now. She's going to be coming home tomorrow. We're going to provide 24-hour care for her to live at home independently and safely.
Great.
But she's 93 years old. They fixed her shoulder. They didn't
Wonderful.
Turn her off.
It's not consistent. Thank goodness.
So much misinformation has been put out, you know. I mean, I think the concept of the healthcare reform that was proposed was a mistake. I think it's an absolute
It's been watered down quite a bit.
It's absolutely useless program. And if I was today, I would vote against it because I think it's the wrong system.
I do too.
But that doesn't mean to say healthcare reform is not required.
No.
It's totally needed.
My hope is now in California and establishing our own form of single payer, I prefer, healthcare.
Single payer has to be the way to go.
I know.
I mean, we've had a dual payer system already. We have Medicare people, and we have people with major medical, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Anthem, whatever they call themselves these days. These people, reimbursement rates for physicians are different from Blue Cross, Blue Shield, than they are from Medicare. So we already have two-tier system.
Yeah.
And if you talk to people, they wonder whether they're getting the same level of care
they're
and support.
Not.
So a two-payer system or two-level system already is proven not to work. So why do we want to continue doing that?
And Tony, that's one thing I really respect about you, that you jumped over the hoops to be certified by the county so that you could provide services for low income and those that otherwise wouldn't have it. And it's the same quality of care. Another question I'd like to ask you is, how do you select your caregivers? Well, what is that screening process?
One of the advantages of being part of this Comfort Care Network was we inherited a basic philosophy. And there's a very core philosophy. And that says we look at a new candidate and we say to ourselves, is this someone we would be comfortable having into our home? Because if we don't feel it's somebody comfortable coming into our home, why should we send them into your home? Now, that's not a very scientific
idea. That's the
idea,
first
but
question.
It's really a philosophical approach
it's
that we take.
It's a feeling from the heart.
It's a trait. We look for heart-centered caregivers. Now, another conceptual idea, you can't measure somebody's heart-centeredness, but there's a bunch of things that you can do. Certainly feel is good. Mm-hmm. But there are certain things, fundamental things that you can do. And we have a pretty rigorous hiring process. It's kind of a 7-step process, which includes a basic interview. We have a basic application packet. We have a skills assessment test that we give people. We require criminal history checks. Mm-hmm. We do driving history checks. This is kind of unusual. Not many people do a driving history check. And our philosophy for that is that we found, again, not totally scientific, but certainly proven out through life experience.
Except for those that don't drive.
Well, there's an interesting aspect of it. But it helps us weed out the people that are not centered. Mm-hmm. If somebody has a string of driving convictions or a string of failure to stop at a stop sign or parking in the wrong place, it perhaps indicates that they are not centered on what they're supposed to be doing, uncaring for and considerate for others.
Yeah.
And we're looking for somebody who's going to be considerate for others. So parking on this, you know, on the wrong spot or on the corner or on a yellow line or whatever is not good news. So, again, it's not scientific, but we've seen a correlation in life that people that have good driving records tend to make good caregivers. People with bad driving records are the ones that don't always show up on time, forget they're supposed to be where they are, or too busy worrying about their getting their hair done than the client.
Interesting correlation.
And so, I know, it's not very scientific, but it's just proven
it's
to
proven
be.
It's itself out.
And occasionally we give somebody the benefit of a doubt, you know, and it comes back to bite us, you know. So, so you know, we stick pretty closely to that now. We like that particular method. So it's a whole bunch of things that we do. We do background checks to work with the children. We have people live scan fingerprinted, mm-hmm. you know, which is another excellent, you know, mm-hmm. process.
I've been through that.
The governor has been trying to get the workers for in-home support services, one of the main primary county support programs, to be fingerprinted as part of that process. And there's various, Civil Liberty Union, Service Employees Union are objecting to this. And I'm finding it very difficult to understand why. But the whole concept of live scan fingerprinting is very good because it's a much more rigorous screen. If I send somebody to be live scan fingerprinted, I'm an approved person. An individual can't just send somebody off to be fingerprinted. You know, I've been approved by the Department of Justice to, uh-huh. you know, to be in this process.
I wondered how that worked.
Yeah, you have to be screened. We had to be screened, and then we had to be trained.
Fingerprinted.
And there's all sorts of privacy, you know, restrictions mm-hmm. and concerns to make sure that people's information is maintained confidential, et cetera, et cetera. But if somebody that we have sent under our recognition number mm-hmm. to be fingerprinted is subsequently arrested for a crime, mm-hmm. we are automatically notified by email. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, for example, on a Friday, somebody's arrested, you know, then on Monday morning, I come into work and I've got a note, I've got an email on my desk saying, you know, this person's been arrested, so we can react to it. The traditional type of background checks that most agencies use is a static one. We check you today, and then we check you again next year. But if you commit a crime tomorrow, I'm officially not going to see it until next year, unless I happen to look in the newspaper and see your name. Not that I'd see your name, of course, but you know what I mean.
My name?
Janaea, your nom de plume.
Yes.
That really confused me, by the way.
I think everyone knows it.
I didn't. It very much confused me.
It did. In what way?
Well, I said, what's your email? And you gave me the Janaea. And I'm thinking, who's Janaea? But I eventually
caught
on.
Now you know Cindy.
I know. Well, I only know you, Cindy.
You do. Indeed.
So background checks. Background checks are an important aspect of it. And we also check references.
Yes.
But references aren't as reliable as they once were.
Yeah.
People don't always tell the truth. You don't know who it is that you're communicating with at the other end for sure. It could be, it could be somebody in some scheme or other. It isn't a guarantee. And the other thing is, going back to my corporate years, we were trained never to give out more information than, yes, that person worked here from this time until that time.
I was, too, in places I've worked.
The human resource people used to drill that into us.
I know.
And originally it was because if you gave somebody a bad reference and they didn't get the job, they would sue you and the company. So you didn't want to be involved in that. So you would give people good references. And then companies that hired people that turned out to be no good would sue you for giving a good reference when it was obviously somebody who was incompetent.
So you just say, I don't know, the person worked here beyond that.
Yeah, there are some key phrases and questions that can be asked that can give you a clue. Mm-hmm. You know, like, for example, is the person eligible to be rehired?
Yes.
You know, is a classic one. If the answer is no, that's a flag.
Yes.
But, you know, people can leave companies for a number of reasons.
That's true.
Employed people that have been let go by their previous companies mm-hmm. for some issue or other, and they've turned out to be wonderful, reliable people.
I know sometimes there are things
beyond
happen.
The surface.
There can be personality conflicts.
Personality conflicts, realistic or unrealistic
differences,
realistic or unrealistic regulations and policies and procedures,
or expectations that were miscommunicated.
Indeed. Well, there, you know, there's a number of. When we started out, one of the things that we were very determined to do was to treat our employees fairly and properly. So we've always paid people honestly. We recognize the number. We're fortunate because, again, one of the advantages of being part of this Comfort Care network is we acquired from Comfort Care operating software that enables us to run our business very efficiently. So we keep track of our employees, their licensing, their CPR certifications. When these things expire, we get flags in advance to call them in to be checked out. You know, and occasionally really good people forget to come in and do that. But we've got a system that picks it up. So this system helps us do a lot of these things. So we can track the hours they work and we can pay them appropriately. And if overtime is involved, we believe in paying overtime, although there are various loopholes in the wage and labor laws of the state of California and the federal ones that enable agencies to avoid paying overtime in certain circumstances. We don't agree with that philosophy, but not everybody does. So we were very conscious about trying to treat people fairly. And interesting, when we started getting new employees in, they started working for us, people would come in on payday, pick up their paycheck and rip it open and they stare at it. And we would start asking them why. And what they were doing basically was looking to see if they'd been paid all the hours they worked. Because they'd been burnt working for people and didn't pay them. And then they pick, sorry, forgot. Did you work that day? Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't remember that. Oh, I'll pay you next time. Forget that.
That would not feel good at all.
Exactly. And so people have come to us.
Because you've worked. I can only imagine.
And so we started to really notice that. And again, it sharpened our reaction to that. And we've just gone overboard trying to make sure we pay people fairly and honestly. And it pays in the end because people like working for us.
Sure.
We've had people that worked for us in 03 and 04 that went off to do other things have now come back because their life circumstances have changed and asked if they can work for us again. And if they left in good standing, we have them back, which is a good sign. We've had people bring in their friends and relatives. Now, you don't do that unless you like people.
No, not at all.
One very sweet lady brought her daughter in to work for us, who's one of our most favorite caregivers. And then her other daughter, when she got to be 18, came in and applied, and she's now working for us as well. So you don't bring
send
your daughters to work for these guys unless they're nice people.
It sounds like almost a family atmosphere.
Well, we are a family, because Victoria, my daughter, is.
Yes, and what is it like working with Victoria?
It's a killer.
Mean by that?
Well, it's a lot of fun because she's very good at her job.
She is,
she's,
I know, Victoria.
A really nice person. And I see more of her now than when she was a teenager and I was in the electronics industry roaring around the world. You know, I see her every day now. And her mother's very jealous of this because I get to hear all the scoop and what's going on and she doesn't. So I say that's her fault, you know. My wife's off doing this marriage and family therapist thing and she works down in Monterey, so.
Oh, it's wonderful.
So she's not actually involved day to day, although she's responsible for what we're doing now.
And did she go to England with you when you went to check on your mother?
No, I did it by myself.
Oh.
That was quite an experience. I mean, my mother, bless her heart, has been a bit of a hoarder, which is not an unusual characteristic.
So there was a lot of stuff.
There was lots of stuff. My mother also didn't believe totally in the banking system, and so I had to go through every pocket and every shoe, you know, and under the mattress and all these other things, and found pounds here and pounds there and pounds everywhere, which was just, and in the end there was just a lot of stuff that she didn't need, and so I hired a guy to come in and sort of take everything away. But in the process, you know, she's got 37 handbags, you know, purses, pocketbooks. And, of course, I wouldn't know which one to pick. She was, the place that she was living was about 5 or 6 miles away from where she used to live. And so I would, was staying there, you know, for the week I was over. And I would get an armful, like, say 6 or 10 purses, and I'd take them down and I'd put them on the floor and, you know, next to the wall and say, "You're allowed 3. And she would pick the 3 she wanted. And I would take the others away. And we did that with cardigans and dresses and stuff. And it worked out. Because otherwise, I'd have picked all the wrong stuff.
Oh, you made it fun, too. And you still gave her choices.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm an only child, which is an added complication to this. You know, so when people tell me, you know, that they're a long-distance caregiver because they live in Watsonville and their mum's in Santa Cruz, you know.
Oh, you know what long-distance caregiver
is. I said, come on, you know. Come on. 6,000 miles away, an only child.
I just want to let any of you that are just tuning in now, this is Tickling the Belly of the Beast in the heartland of Santa Cruz, and we're talking with Tony Walker. He is the CEO of Comfort Care, and we're learning about caring for our loved ones as they get older. And one thing I want to ask you is, on your website, you list the signs of someone who may be in need of care. And what are some of those for our listeners?
There's a whole bunch. Let me throw just some of the very simple examples out.
You said there were 10, I think.
Well, then you're going to put me on a spot because I'm going to remember all 10 of them. But we'll give it a go.
We will.
Here's one. Saucepans burnt at the bottom.
What was that?
Saucepans.
Oh, saucepans.
Cooking pots.
Yes.
Cooking pots burnt at the bottom. Why? Because they've switched them on, left them on, burnt the whatever's. So burnt pans, there's one. When you go see mum and dad, you know, the laundry's piled up in the, you know, wherever the overflowing out of the hamper.
Yes.
The mail's still, you know, the mail's falling out of the mailbox. There's another one. Doctor's office calls you up and says, hey, your mum's missed another appointment. Mm-hmm. Forgetting to go to appointments.
Yes.
Medically unstable because you've forgotten to take your prescribed medications.
Yes.
How are we doing? We got to 5 now,
yeah.
Right? Because you now put me on a total
spot. Or the
spot.
Ones that are most
I'd much
important.
Rather. Let me talk about something else. No,
sure.
I'm only kidding.
there's
a handful, you know. The
yes.
Not paying bills. There's another mm-hmm. one.
Not changing their clothes as often. Not
yes.
bathing as much,
yes.
possibly.
Perhaps, yes.
I've seen
urine smells, you know, other yes. kind of less pleasant odors and so forth, you know, as an indication of not taking, you know, care of themselves. Should be relatively easy for a visiting person to go to spot, you know, something like that. You know, I'm always mindful of the concept when children are growing up and Aunt Mary comes to town and says, wow, little Jimmy's grown a foot, you know, and you look at him and say, no, he hasn't, you know, because you see him every day,
yes.
you don't notice. But when you see them,
do.
Yeah. We see a big pickup of interest of clients around between Thanksgiving and Christmas and a little after New Year.
That's why.
Because what happens, people show up for Thanksgiving, they see their parents, and they go, there's something not quite right here. They talk about it amongst themselves. They go back and see them at Christmas, and they say, there is a problem. We need to do about it. There's something to do about it. And then they move on from there. So those are some of the indicators. Falling, you mentioned, you know,
yes.
bruising, you know,
yes.
Skin breakdowns,
yes.
you know, black and certainly with older persons where their circulation starts to fail a little
breathing
bit.
Breathing difficulties sometimes.
Yeah. And then you mentioned, you know, earlier about Alzheimer's, you know.
Yes.
Forgetfulness, you know, forgetting names, places. It happens to all of us, you know. I think that I'm not quite sure when, but I think from about...
I'm observing it within myself.
Well, I think about 18 when the drinking age is 18 in England. So I think probably at 18 I started killing brain cells, you know.
It's cumulative.
I have to admit there are days when, you know, people I've known for ages, I get, so-and-so. And it's like, I can't pull the name.
I know it.
And then it comes to me a little later. And this is an early warning sign of those situations. And, you know, some of us can see it coming, you know. It's being forgetful is a natural part of the aging process. But, you know, not recognizing your daughter when she comes to visit, you know, is a little more significant.
And the irritability, sometimes mood changes.
Frustration.
Or personality changes.
Oh, personality change is a big one. But you have a couple of reasons for that, you know. If somebody's mobility or ability starts to decline, oftentimes there'll be people getting frustrated because they can't do what they've always been able to do. Damn it, I always used to be able to get the car in the garage. Now I keep crashing into the wall. And it's frustrating.
It is, yes.
The hardest thing to get off somebody is their driver's license. I mean, a lot of folks do not want to give up their driver's license.
No, they want
to create
their mobility.
They cling to it because even if they don't use it, they don't want to give up their license because they could if they
it's
wanted
the independence.
To. Well, funny you should say that. That word independence is a big fear word, or lack of independence, or loss of independence.
Lack.
Is a fear word for, a fear concept for seniors. What I usually tell them when we have sort of a sofa visit, or, you know, a get-together, perhaps with the family members with them, is if we're going to come in for 4 hours a day, 3 days a week, that's 12 hours in a week. There's 168 hours in a week. That means we're there 12 hours. You're on your own 156 hours or 52 hours, whatever the math, 156. That's pretty darn independent. You know, so having us come in for 4 hours, three times a week, you're not giving up your independence. What we tell them is we're there to help them maintain their independence. And that's a huge philosophical difference.
When I was thinking of independence, I was thinking of that's one reason they cling to their license.
Oh, but no, you're absolutely right. But, you know,
but it's, I agree with you.
But just the whole concept of independence. The license is one of them. Being able to write their own checks is another, or pay their own bills is another indication of independence. What we, you know, people's, my mother has had arthritis for years, so she's had problems writing.
Yeah.
Many of our clients have problems writing. So what we can do to help them is we can fill out the name and the amount, and then they can still sign it. They're still in charge of their finances.
Therefore, that's why LifeScan is so important. If you have some, I can write out the checks.
Yeah. Well, we don't let people sign the checks, but they can fill out the body of it, you know, and let the person sign it.
Yeah.
And it's making it easier for them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the whole concept is to how to keep them as independent as their abilities will allow.
And I imagine because they're working so closely together in the person's home, I mean, that's their sacred space,
right.
I see it as, it's important that they be able to get along. So do you ask afterwards, how do you feel about the person? Is it a good match? And then talk with the caregiver too.
Yeah. Our very best clients tell us. Because it's good or it's bad, they tell us.
Yes.
And it's important to know that. Again, one of the things we say in our initial interviews and meetings with the clients and their families is we will do our best to match up. One of the reasons we have the meeting is to try and understand the person, get a feel for their characteristics, their likes, their preferences, and so forth. And we try to match from our roster of staff.
So important.
Well, we have, you know, there's over 100 people on our roster.
Uh-huh.
And so we have a big pool of people to pull.
Yes.
To call on. Not all are available every day at every time. So we have a roster of people that we call upon. We juggle a little bit. But we try to make people match. Now, sometimes that works perfectly and sometimes it doesn't. So we always tell our clients, if it doesn't work for you, let us know. We can send somebody else. I always tell them, though, if we send 10 people and you don't like any of them, then we're going to have to sit down and talk about it. But that's something else.
That is.
But it doesn't ever get to that. It never gets to that level. But we don't... We don't get a lot of job satisfaction if the client's not happy.
Of course not.
So we want to make the person happy, and if a change is required, then that's what happens. Now, sadly, it's sometimes very unfair on the caregiver. And we're very concerned about our staff as well. But our clients, obviously, are very important to us. And if certainly somebody that's of advanced years, maybe there's one of the dementia conditions like Alzheimer's or some other similar condition in play, their judgment, their level of confusion may increase. And so their perception of the problems being the fault of the caregiver may not be valid, but they're absolutely insistent. I don't want that person anymore.
You have to honor
we have to honor that. And sometimes our caregiver, who's been doing a wonderful job and no fault on their own, you know, has to be reassigned.
And it's important to let them know that. Don't take it personally in this industry.
Well, we have caregivers that take it personally and they learn the hard way. We have others that understand that and you have to move on.
Yeah.
The good news is, from our caregiver's perspective, is that there are a lot of people needing help.
Yes,
so,
there are.
You know, there's every opportunity that we can reassign the person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then sometimes we find that people are just not cut out for a certain type of work.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned yourself that you're very comfortable with the hospice world. Not everybody is comfortable with that, of going through that end of life experience with a client.
To me, it's so rich when people tell me they're not. I look forward to people dying, but I just for some reason have that facility.
Yes,
it's very rich for me. I mean, it's difficult in some respects, but
not everybody has that, and so we try to recognize that as well. You know, in the same way when we work with the developmentally disabled persons, you know, we have children. We had one lady, she said to me, I don't want to work with children. I've got six kids of my own. You know, I don't want to work with any more kids. And I can understand that. We respect that. We have some young girls that are perhaps UCSC students or Cabrillo students. They get to go hang out with somebody who's got a six-month-old, you know, and it's like rent a baby for the day. So they love that kind of work.
Yeah.
Or they go to play with a young child, a child with autism, needs a lot of attention, a lot of interactive play, and it can be a fun assignment.
Yeah.
We just go into their world. That's right. Well, we just assign somebody to go take somebody to 24-hour fitness to, you know, to exercise and work on their...
I've probably seen that. That's where I work out.
Well, this is a new client, so we were just going to start on that project.
Now, I was going to ask you, are there any... We only have about 5 more minutes, maybe a little bit more.
Doesn't time fly?
I know.
When you're
it does.
Fun.
It does. I just looked up there and I was shocked. It does. But our other guests aren't here yet, so we can continue.
No problem.
Probably open the door for them at some point, though, in case they're knocking. I can't hear with this on. One thing we had talked on the phone about specific questions, and I wanted to ask you, are there any other ways to pay for long-term care?
As we talked about earlier, you know, the basic, the traditional healthcare, you know, vehicles such as, you know, major medical, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Medicare, mm-hmm. does not reimburse for our services. So
yes.
So we have people that pay privately, people self-insure effectively. They either have retirement accounts, they have savings plans, or they take out an insurance policy against their long-term care. It's called long-term care insurance. And it's something that perhaps less than 10% of the population actually has at this moment. But I predict that over the next 10 to 20 years, that number is going to significantly increase.
For those that can afford it and have the extra
It's kind of a chicken and egg thing. You know, it's one of those deals where the earlier you start paying into, the cheaper it is. If you leave it too late and develop some chronic condition, you'll be excluded and it'll be too late. But, you know, if you wait till you're 80, it's going to be ridiculously expensive.
Yeah.
If you're 40, they'll accept you at 80. It just costs you a lot of money. If you don't have any pre-existing conditions.
Oh.
But then you get different levels of policies, you know, from the Yugo through to the Rolls-Royce and everything in between. But the interesting thing I've observed now in 7 years of working with the seniors in the community, the quality of life of somebody that took out long-term care insurance earlier on and is now using that resource to pay for their home care leaves them in a much more comfortable situation. There's less strain on them. There's less strain on the family finances.
Yeah.
People have a much calmer outlook on what's a very difficult or potentially very difficult end of their, you know, time scenario.
It takes out a lot of the
people
uncertainty.
People that don't have that resource, that have some limited finances, have a better position. Another way people tap into finances is a reverse mortgage. Now, reverse mortgages had a pretty bad rap 20 years ago when they first came out, but they've been regulated now. They're very well controlled. Anybody over 62 years old can tap into the home equity.
Can you tell me what it is, the reverse mortgage?
Oh, I'm certainly not here to sell insurance, but I know people who do. And I've sat through a lot of presentations. So in order to recommend it to people, you know, I want to know what it's about myself. Basically, you can use the equity in your home to get a line of credit, which you can either take out as a lump sum or pull out as a typical line of credit. And the big difference between a reverse mortgage and a home equity loan from the bank or, you know, from a mortgage company, with a home equity loan, you have a repayment each month. With a reverse mortgage, there are no repayments. You have interest accruing. So if you, let's say, for example, you take $200,000 out over a period of time and you accrue $20,000 worth of interest, so you have a bill of $220,000.
Mm-hmm.
When a person passes away, the family has 12 months to sell the home or pay off the reverse mortgage.
I see.
So there's no financial burden on the senior through their last years of having a payment to make each month. They can use the money for their care, not for the repayment. If you have a home equity loan, let me just give you a very simple example. If you have a home equity loan that's going to cost you $1,000 a month, and you need $2,000 a month to live on, you have to take a home equity loan out for $3,000 in order to make that work. Mm-hmm. With a reverse mortgage, you only have to take out $2,000 a month. Mm-hmm. And then the money, the interest is only accrued on what you've taken out, you know, until the end of time.
And you may ultimately lose the home, depending on how long.
But you're not there.
No, but for your children, they're inheriting. You're not there.
Well, that's the trade-off, you see.
Yes.
You know, you...
The risk.
They can pay off
all
the mortgage.
All the more reason for a national system of health care. So people
100%.
Aren't losing. I know you are.
I'm 100% in belief of that. And having seen what the system has done for my mother, you know, and I've seen what the system has not done for some wonderful people in this county, I'm absolutely convinced that we need to do something very, very different from what we're doing.
And how long have you been doing this? Since 2003?
Yeah,
so you've probably seen a lot of changes, too. And
I've seen, the big difference today than 7 years ago when we started is that since the economic bubble thing had burst and the real estate money has burst, a lot of what people were relying on for their later years, their savings accounts, they've been halved or their home equity has been decimated. They are now living in a state of fear that they're going to outlive whatever's left in that kitty. And that's the scary time for these poor people. Whereas 5 or 7 years ago, it didn't look that way. They thought they were comfortable. Yeah. They were set, you know, to the end of their time.
And what are we going to do in the future when there are so many of us, the baby boomers, as we spoke about earlier, start to need these services? They will have a collapse. I just hope that something is done in the not too distant future.
Well, depending on which side of the political argument that you listen to, but people for some time have been saying that Medicare, is broke. Well, Medicare's paying out bills every day. I mean, they're not, in the same way as with my mortgage, I own more money. I owe the banks more money than I have. Does that mean I'm broke? No, it just the way finances work in this country.
Yes, I know. It's the way it works in this country.
But, is the country going to turn around and say, Medicare's run out, so let's just turn all these hundreds of thousands or millions or multi-millions of seniors on the streets, not give them any help?
But services are being cut right and left, and a lot of people don't have the care that they used to have, let alone quality of care. They're suffering.
Oh, it's very simple, Cindy.
They seem to be, yes.
Janaea, whomever you are today.
You're so funny.
It's two choices.
We'll come up with a new
one. There are two choices. You either cut services or you increase taxes.
I agree.
What alternative do you have?
And then I can get into where the tax money is going to war. Yet England has supported an empire for so many years.
Well, yeah, but I mean, England has the same overall financial crisis that happened here. There's the real estate problem. There was
the
mortgage and loan problem.
Have they been cutting back on social services?
Well, yes and no.
After Thatcher.
Thatcher was actually a conservative and would have been after cutting back on social services and unemployment and so forth. But, generally speaking, there's a commitment to service and support those
at a
level.
It's a philosophical difference. I feel like that they believe, I'm just guessing, that people are entitled to health care and a certain quality of life. And here, the insurance industry seems to run more in a profit motive. Profit before the quality of the care or even care.
Without wanting to sound too contentious, but here we are, the richest country in the world, right?
Yes.
I mean, a very good friend of mine is a chiropractor.
Not sure if we are
the Chinese probably are, but a very good friend of mine, chiropractor in town, and he happens to believe in natural wellness.
Yes.
Right? He very strongly believes in, preventative medication.
I do as well.
Right. We have 4% of the world's population. We spend 50% of what the world spends on pharmaceuticals.
Mm-hmm.
And we rank 38th on the World Health Organization of healthiest
mismanaged.
People. So you cannot manage health by medications. It doesn't work.
No. And Tony, we've got to have you back. Because
take a number.
I really want to take a number. Our guests are here for the second hour, but I have been thoroughly enjoying talking with Tony Walker, the CEO of Comfort Care. And Tony, is there anything you'd like to say to our listeners just before you go? A gem.
Hang in there. It'll get sorted out.
It will.
I believe so. I really believe this. The best country in the world. We got to the stage that we have been in. We can get it back. But we need to help each other.
Tony, what is your website?
www.comforcare.com. C-O-M-F-O-R-C-A-R-E.
And
comforcare. Phone number is 831-427-1553.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Has been delightful for me.
I enjoyed it as well. More Rolling Stones next time.
Yes, you bet. Thanks again. That was Tony Walker of Comfort Care. And in a few minutes, we're going to be speaking with Sequoia and Jack Cheney about a very interesting way to take care of ourselves and actually reverse chronic illnesses. For a moment, let's see. I've got something coming on for you. Regarding, it's the original raw food living diva.
This is for the raw divas.
Come a little closer, listen to my lips. Tap those little toes and start to sway those hips. Yeah, that's the way. Now if you got a sparkle, let it shine. Wouldn't it be dandy if this feeling stayed? And you could greet each day with new zeal. Well, since day as you can, if you ditch your pots and pans and change the way you think about your meal. I'm an achiever, a change believer. I'm a goddess for the top and raw diva. Said no, no more blues, all the script menus. Goodbye.
All right, this is Tickling the Belly of the Beast from the heartland of Santa Cruz. And from 3 to 4, I've got some special guests here. They're all special, but these are very dear friends of mine. They're doing some incredible things. Sequoia Cheney. Welcome, Sequoia. Say hi to our listeners.
Everyone. It's a pleasure to
be
here.
Can you get a little closer there? Great. And we have her husband, Mike Cheney.
How about Jack?
Jack Cheney. I'm sorry. This is only my second interview. You looked so shocked. My apologies. And with us is another, my co-host, Sandra O'Leary. Hi, Sandra.
Hi.
She was here before a couple of weeks ago when we were talking with Florian Schlosser. But Sequoia recently graduated from the school Living Light Culinary Institute. And she's learned a tremendous amount and has actually healed herself of diabetes. So we're going to be talking about the reversal of diseases, chronic illnesses, and how we can better take care of ourselves through our diet, and particularly raw foods. And we can start with a little bit about how you got into this, Sequoia.
Okay,
can you get a little bit closer? There, thanks.
Jack and I have been doing healing work for probably 10 years in this area. And we own or run Three Trees Retreat in Watsonville, California, which is a spiritual healing. People come to us for spiritual healing.
Yeah.
And we've had amazing miracles, great results with people. And for myself personally, 5 years ago, I was diagnosed with diabetes. And it was kind of a shock because I ate the standard American diet. I did everything that I thought I was supposed to do. I was growing older, and I knew I wasn't feeling that good, but I just didn't know what was up. And so when I was diagnosed with the diabetes, it was really a shock.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to do. I followed the directions from my doctors. They put me on medication. I followed the American Diabetes diet, and I did everything possible, and it just wasn't working. My blood sugar was still high. I wasn't feeling well. I was still a little overweight. And I thought, well, maybe now that I'm over 50, this is the way my life is going to be.
Oh.
And I would have to be just accept the fact that as you get older, you might not feel as energetic. You might not look as cute. I might not be as attractive.
Oh, and you're beautiful. I don't want to hear that.
So that began my journey into researching everything that I could about diet, nutrition, exercise, and to do the best that I could to heal myself. And about 6 months ago, I was taken off all medication. My blood sugar is completely normal. The diabetes has been reversed, and that's a really big deal because I would say 90% of the people who have diabetes don't know really what to do to manage it. And they end up on one medication or two medications and eventually insulin. And as my husband can talk about, he sees a lot of the results are really the end result of diabetes in the hospital. So he sees the people who bodies won't heal anymore, or they're losing their eyesight, or their organs are shutting down. It's a really serious thing, and it's very serious in our community right now.
It is.
Even children are getting diabetes, and so I just needed to...
It's almost an epidemic.
It is. It really is, and because of the quality of our food.
So that's how you got started into researching. Now, about a year ago, I noticed your diet had changed drastically. You were no longer eating sweets and ate a lot of vegetables and salads.
Yeah, and the sweet, they recommend that even a diabetic stays away from white refined sugar and even fruit, because the concentration of sugar in the fruit really doesn't help the body process it completely. So in the beginning, when you're diagnosed, you should stay away from everything sweet, including all the diet drinks, the aspartame, and the cakes, the cookies, the pasta, the white flour, everything. People should stay completely away. What the doctors try to tell diabetics is, okay, you can have a little. But what happens is that the body wants more. So if you're having a little and then your body and the cravings want more, you're not learning how to control what you're eating and your blood sugar.
And have your cravings pretty much disappeared?
All completely disappeared.
Wow. And did you have strong cravings for sweets?
Oh, always. Yeah, I have no cravings, no snacking. And when we go into talking about the raw food diet, raw food, most people think, is that you sit there and eat carrots and celery all day, or big, huge salads, and all of a sudden you're going to turn into a rabbit. But you're not. The word raw means in its natural state. You're eating food in its natural state with all the enzymes, all the nutrition, all the vitamins, all the minerals, and you're feeding your body to support your organs, your brain, your system, your health, and you get better energy and you sleep better and the inflammation goes and everything in your body starts working.
Now, isn't that the digestion? It's easier to digest. Can you?
Oh, yeah. Being a live food filled with enzymes, it's easier for your body to digest and you don't spend all of your energy digesting food. You know how people after Thanksgiving want to take a nap or a big dinner?
Or for me, after a bag of popcorn.
Yeah. Eating this way, you have an abundance of energy and you feel good and your skin feels good and you just are happier.
And when I spoke to you on the phone a couple of weeks ago, you told me the variety of dishes that you were preparing. It didn't sound like raw food at all to me. What are some of the dishes?
What I learned is how to create raw foods that feel and taste like cooked foods. So if you can imagine eating lasagna with a ricotta cheese made out of almonds. And the noodles are made out of zucchini. And so everything is cooked at below 118 degrees. So things are cooked, but never above 118 degrees.
Why is it about 118 degrees?
Because after that, it becomes, instead of live food, it becomes dead food.
Mm-hmm.
You overcook it, and the heat sort of changes it, and everything else isn't working. So 118 degrees is the magic number. So we eat things like lasagna, pizza with a live crust. It's amazing. Cakes,
what's
cookies.
In the live crust?
It's made from seeds and flax seeds and sunflower seeds and pumpkin seeds and onions. And it's really good and all spices and it's tasty.
Are you going to invite me over for dinner?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. So it's just an amazing thing to be able to see in such a short period of time how easy our body can heal itself.
Mm-hmm.
May I jump in?
Yes.
And Jack, you haven't even said hello.
Hello, everybody. Jack. Hi, it's Jack here.
And can you say a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm married to Sequoia, and I get to eat all this wonderful food. I'm
You're
a therapist.
Part of Three Trees.
Yeah, I'm one of the co-founders of Three Trees, and this journey's been a really big eye opener for me as well. I have to confess that I was a cookieholic.
You know, I still am.
Yeah. You put a plate full of cookies in front of me in the past, they'd
spend hours in the treadmill like a rat.
Yeah, there you go.
It doesn't help.
So when people are hearing this message, they're thinking, I can't give up my cookies. I can't give up my sweets, can't give up my cakes, especially because, you know, XYZ is having a birthday or a celebration. I've got to have a piece, you know. And so the thing is, it feels like it's going to be really hard. But what's really amazing is that our body has an amazing adaptive ability to change our what we like and what we crave. Our taste buds are one of the most rapidly reproduced cell systems in our body. So after about 3 weeks going on a new diet, your body, your taste buds readapt. And that's one of the reasons why the cravings go away. Because all of a sudden, they're the new taste buds, the new cells, and of course the body is just going, wow, oh, this feels good, this feels right. And you start to, you know, start to get on this glow, and everybody's talked about the glow with the raw foods and that kind of thing. It's you know, it's just a natural state of health from eating the natural foods, and we have a lot to be thankful for there because the way that our bodies were designed and evolved over the millions of years that we've evolved, we evolved eating raw foods. We evolved eating, you know, more raw and foods in their live state than otherwise, because it took a lot of energy to put everything together in that way. So one of the messages I want to just get back to before we get back to all the delicious and wonderful recipes that Sequoia wants to mention and that you guys are talking about is my experience working at the hospital. I've been a therapist for about 25 years, and for the last 11 years I worked in a local hospital as a art and music therapist. And I've worked with a lot of people with serious medical illnesses, not just diabetes, but cancer and heart disease. And I see what happens when we hit the slippery slope and start to, and our health starts to fail. And it's not a pretty sight.
No.
So the doctors are going to do what they can do. And medical science has advanced to a certain point. But what people in general tend to fail to realize is that the lion's share of the responsibility for our health rests in our hands. Even when we're under a doctor's care, we have the responsibility to make healthful choices and not tell ourselves a pack of half-truths about, oh, this will be okay today, and I'm going to just enjoy a cookie here and do this there. As we grow older, our bodies are prone to breaking down, and so we have to do what we need to do, not just physically, but emotionally and spiritually and mentally,
yes,
to fulfill the whole approach that we need.
One thing I want to address, though, is some people think that eating healthfully, either organic food or raw foods, is more expensive, and they may not have. That's why I asked you both to come on to talk about raw foods, its accessibility, the ease of preparing it, and the cost of it. I mean, long term, it's cost effective because you're taking care of your health. But our culture tends to encourage fast foods, cheaper foods in the grocery store. And some communities don't have access to health food stores. And it can be more expensive.
But not more expensive than a bypass operation.
Oh, for sure. And that's what I'm saying in the long term. But what is the price range of what you're preparing? Can you address that, the cost of the foods? Have you cut back on your...
What I've noticed in our shopping is that our food bill is less than when I was buying a lot of packaged foods, frozen foods, canned foods. So yes. I'm seeing really that in the long run, it will be less and well worth it. And the other very interesting thing,
you
don't eat as much. I am just so shocked that my appetite is about half of what it used to be, and I feel satisfied and full on what we're eating. Like today for lunch, we had a beautiful salad with all sorts of things. Then I made a beet and carrot citrus salad. And then we had a pate made from pecans on some beautiful crackers. And it was a perfect meal. Last night I made stuffed grape leaves, raw, with a Greek salad.
You're probably eating more gourmet now than you were.
Oh,
you always
gourmet.
Were a good cook.
But my favorite part is the desserts.
Ah.
I make these amazing tarts and pies and puddings and cakes and brownies, all raw, no sugar, no dairy, all healthy. So you sit and you eat this food and you're going, oh my God, is this really true? Am I eating this?
You look forward to eating.
Oh, I can't even tell you. Because for me,
that's
on
great.
This journey,
what?
Oh. If I don't like to the taste of something, I will not eat it, and
me
I
too.
Will not stick with it. So I needed to find a lifestyle or something where I would be satisfied, my taste buds, and the feeling of not being deprived. So here we get everything. But this, I have to tell you about my tart. So everybody listen to this one. The crust is made from coconut, macadamia nuts, and dates.
Oh.
The inside is a chocolate pudding layered with banana on the bottom, chocolate pudding, and then strawberries. Oh my God! It's like
sounds so wonderful, rich.
And what is the chocolate pudding made from?
Jack, grab that.
Avocados.
I was going to ask you. Well, where's the chocolate?
From carob or cacao.
Cacao.
Which is it's raw chocolate. And you can add like agave or something for sweetness.
Yeah. I was going to ask you that.
But it's fabulous. I can't even tell you. Just look at your expression, if you could see it here.
And
a dessert
like that does not spike your blood sugar.
No.
Mm-mm. It what?
Does not spike our blood sugar. So yeah. You can eat that and it's perfect.
So, Koya, you sound like you're
This is Sandra.
Re-educating. I'm salivating over here. You're re-educating your taste buds.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Oh, my gosh.
Definitely. We made truffles, little chocolate truffles, and caramels, and everything from whole foods. So when you eat this, you are nourishing your body. You're making yourself healthy, and you're enjoying it at the same time. I am just like in seventh heaven.
This must have been quite a rigorous program to have learned so much in such a short period of time. And you told me you were going to learn cooking raw foods and cooking well, raw foods. I didn't quite understand what was involved. I thought you would learn a little bit more about vegetables. And how could you go for a whole month learning about vegetables, nuts, a little bit about...
Yeah, we went, it was like raw food boot camp.
Boot camp?
Uh-huh. It was the most intense 10, 12-hour days, 7 days a week for a month. And it was the most amazing experience of my life.
Uh-huh.
I learned so much, and I can't even tell you. It was so exciting. And I'm going back for another month. I'm becoming a gourmet chef. I'm going to be teaching. Jack and I will be doing a series of cooking classes. Jack is going to be a educator of the science of raw food. So besides me teaching the actual cooking, he will have the information on the science of raw foods and what that all means for your body and how it interacts with each other. So April 25th is a free talk on Why Raw at Three Trees Retreat.
And can you give your phone number or website now? And will you be putting that information up on your website?
Yeah, it will be on our website, www.threetreesretreat.com, and spell the word three, T-H-R-E-E-T-R-E-E-S. R-E-T-R-E-A-T.
And that's April 25th.
It's a Sunday at 12 noon.
And the land there is beautiful. Very much alive, similar to the foods they're now eating. Very sacred. It's my favorite.
Actually, I've been eating the the plants that have been coming out of the land because I'm a forager anyway.
I know, me too.
And so every year I've been watching the miner's lettuce grow and the dandelions in the spring, and everything is just so full of life. It's just, and you know, I'll nibble here and there in the past, but lately I'm so excited. When I go out to make our green drink in the morning, of course we use kale and other kinds of greens, but then I'll go out and I'll get maybe 4 or 5 cups of miner's lettuce and a couple cups of dandelion free. I mean, in this environment, it's just there for the picking. Talk about
that's the mother she provides for us. She nurtures us.
That's the cheapest grocery store there is.
Yes, and your land is. You take such amazing care of it. It's going to give back.
And there's marrow. There's so many wonderful
plants. And medicines on the land too.
Yeah. Well, see, now that's the point. You just said it.
Food is medicine.
Exactly.
As is water. Yeah.
Exactly.
What is the most intimate thing that we put in our bodies? It's our food. We do it like breathing. Mm-hmm. We like we do with our breath, we take it for granted. Our food, we take for granted, too. We need to live consciously in that sense. We need to learn to train ourselves to breathe consciously. We need to learn to train ourselves to eat consciously. And it's not just good for our bodies. Going down this route, it's better for the earth.
Mm-hmm. You know, yes.
We're
sustainability.
Sustainability, exactly. And we're getting foods locally. We're not needing to ship things across, across time zones in order for us to eat it. We can.
It's still alive. It's
exactly.
Right here.
And it encourages us to garden.
Or,
you know, in whatever situation, you can at least do a lot of sprouting in your house.
And are
all
you
year
going,
round.
Are you going to be having any classes in gardening as well? I'm very interested in that also.
Yeah, no. we don't have plans for that, but I think it's definitely a adjunct to any time that you come out to Three Trees, because we'll take you through the gardens and show you what
chickens.
We're doing. And I'm always open for learning more about helping the soil regain its health and vitality so that it can feed us.
Now there are two things I want to explore some more. Number one is, how does it, a little bit more, how it interacts with our body, what really happens, what the shift is from eating what we usually eat, cooked foods, junk food. And then, what was my other question? Let's start with that one. It just flew out.
Okay.
How you feel physically, what have you noticed?
Okay, well, there's a lot of questions implied in your one
yes.
question there. But
let's just
compare the...
I don't want to forget them. You're helping me hold them.
If you compare cooked foods, cooked vegetables with raw vegetables, first of all, there's a right way to cook vegetables, and so that you do maintain at least most of their nutrient value. Yeah, steaming, cooking on low heat if you're going to cook foods, is a very acceptable and healthy way of doing it. But if you mm-hmm. want to capture all of the food value, then you eat the food in its natural state. Mm-hmm. And Sequoia has developed ways of getting the textures just right and the tastes and the seasonings just right.
She's always been good at that,
yeah.
Regardless of what she was making. That's been a gift.
I'm going to pop in here. One of the most important thing with raw food is mouthfeel and texture and flavor, because nobody wants to eat anything that doesn't taste good, as we talked about before. But also, in raw foods, size, consistency, everything that you put in it is very important, because if you're making something, you don't want a big hunk of onion in your mouth or a big hunk of carrot or something
right.
that just doesn't go. So everything
it's
is a perfect
mixture.
It's called a perfect bite. So when you take a bite of something, you get all the flavors and all the ingredients in that bite.
Now I'm starting to salivate. I've got to go for dinner soon.
And I think one of the biggest fears...
No more potlucks.
Yeah, no, I've been bringing stuff to potluck. But
oh, I bet you're being asked back again.
When people think about raw foods, it scares them. Because one, they don't know what to do with it. Two, they don't want to sit and eat carrots and celery for the rest of their life. And three, they think it's too much work and too much preparation.
That's true.
Yeah. But really, it isn't. If somebody wanted to eat more raw foods without making major changes in their life and still eat cooked foods or meat or dairy or whatever they're doing, but if they wanted to go more raw just to start out slow, they do a few things. One would to be have a green juice every morning. Mm-hmm. And or a smoothie, a fruit smoothie with bananas, strawberries. You can throw in a little kale, and so you get your greens, have your green juice.
I always like to eat, though. I mean, some
those are just in the morning.
Ah.
And then before every meal, just add a big green salad. Doing those simple things, you're already 50% raw.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the most important thing to add into the diet is greens, kale, lettuce, spinach, celery, collards. All
organic.
Of those greens, Yeah, organic. And there are some foods that if you cannot buy organic, they are marginally safe. I have a list of things that when you go to the market and if something isn't there, there's a list of things that you could get that are not organic that are still safe.
This is wonderful because it's in addition to the healing work that you do.
Yes.
It's supporting their health.
Exactly.
Internally as well.
Exactly.
Their diet.
Exactly. And the most important thing people always ask, well, where do you get your protein from? Where do you get your protein from? Where do you get your protein from?
The nuts?
No. The leafy greens. There's 50% of the calories in kale are from protein. We have not been taught that you can get protein from vegetables.
It's true.
And you can. And it's really exciting. The USDA has a nutritional database on the internet that will go into all, the proteins and vegetables and all the different things. It's very interesting.
No, we're not taught that as
Mm-mm.
a rule.
No. So it's really exciting.
Sequoia, I wanted to ask you, now, is your kitchen being redesigned now after you came back? That's
yes.
what I wanted to know.
There's three main pieces of equipment that you use in raw foods. Okay, one is a Cuisinart food processor. Two, a Vitamix, which is a high-speed blender. And three, a dehydrator. You use the dehydrator as an oven. And it's really an amazing thing. You can make wraps and tortillas and crackers and all sorts of things in that dehydrator that will still keep the food alive, and you can make amazing recipes. So what I wanted to talk about now, besides our talk on April 25th, on May 2nd, 2 weeks after, we're going to have our first class. It's called All American. No, it's going to be called Forget Cooking. And that will be the introduction class. And it will go into things like almond milk, a not tuna pate, a chocolate mousse, about 7 or 8 different items that I'll be showing how people can start out simply and easily. And so the class is on May 2nd. It's at 1 o'clock. It's a 3-hour class. It's a Sunday. And that's the introduction. The next class will be on May 23rd, and that will be All American Comfort Foods. There we're going to have a burger, barbecue sauce, onion rings.
Yeah. Now,
onion rings.
How are you going to prepare them?
In the dehydrator. They're just simple, simple ways to prepare this food and enjoy it. And then the third class will be called Latin American Fiesta. And then I'm going to show and prepare salsa, enchiladas that are to live for, guacamole, and a dessert and a few other items.
Which I love.
Yeah, it's going to be really a lot of fun.
What are those three dates again, Sequoia?
So the dates are April 25th for the Raw Foods Talk at 12 noon, which is a Sunday. Forget Cooking class is also a Sunday, May 2nd at 1 o'clock. The All-American Comfort Food class is on May 23rd at 1 o'clock. And the Latin American Fiesta is on June 23rd at 1 o'clock.
And for how long?
Three-hour classes.
Three-hour classes.
And the cost is $75 for the class, but if people sign up for all three, they'll get a 15% discount, so it's like 63.
So what's that total? 63?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's really well worth it and really exciting.
And do they sign up online, or should they call you?
They should call us at 831-768-7592.
831-768-7532. And we'll say that again just before the end of the hour.
7592.
7592. Dyslexia, I need to. So how have you felt physically? What have you noticed? What are some of the...
I feel...
since eating. This has been up 2 months
here.
For you now? Jack.
Yeah. It's been absolutely fantastic. My energy level is way up. And I find I get up in the morning and I just, you know, I have so many things to do out there at Three Trees. And I wanted to get a big jump on our garden. And so I completely changed all of the soils in the raised garden planter beds, and I got another 20 planters to put in. And I mean, I've just been, I've been an explosion of activity and energy. And I've been sleeping like a baby, too. It's all the way around, it's been really like turning the clock back.
And what about your clarity of mind? Has it? I've been feeling more sluggish. That's why I ask.
Well, yeah, my mental clarity is has been, I think, has improved considerably. And this has just been a couple
memory?
Of months.
We talked about Alzheimer's in the last hour a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's just, that's part of the slippery slope that we don't want to have to go down.
Yeah.
And when we start to feel, you know, sluggish and...
Achy, inflammation. Yes, has this alleviated a lot
completely.
Of those symptoms?
What the raw foods diet does, it creates an alkaline base in your body. And if your body is fully alkaline, disease cannot live in an alkaline environment. Disease happens in an acid environment. And so when you're
That's the clue. So
and
it takes care of the arthritis, the
everything,
diabetes.
Everything. Blood pressure, heart. Everything. It takes care of everything. And people who are on a raw foods diet are not 100% raw, okay? Even though we cook in a dehydrator and things like that, people still occasionally will go out and eat a cooked meal. We're not saying you never can have a cooked meal again. You can't go to a party or a potluck. It is saying that, oh, I can have a cooked meal when I feel like it, or when it's appropriate. You're not going to stop yourself from living totally. So you manage and you balance things in your life to the best of your ability.
You can probably feel the difference, too.
Oh,
if you go out and maybe slip and have a hot fudge sundae or something, you'd probably feel so sick your body had been purified from eating raw foods for so long that the taste would probably be terribly off as well, I would imagine.
Yeah, but you never want to do something that you have to be like so rigid. You're just flexible. You know, you do the best that you can. You start off slow. You start loving it. Then you learn more and more and more and more.
So you start, you're actually craving it now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really exciting.
I can understand the alkaline balance. I've heard that.
Yeah, and they have the alkaline acid index on the internet. You can get a list of foods printed out, which are more alkaline, which are more acid, so you know, you can educate yourself.
And are there any books if you'd rather not go online that often?
You could go to the library. I think there's a lot on the pH alkaline balance.
And then the specific foods.
Exactly.
And the ingredients that you'd be putting in.
Exactly.
There's a wonderful book that I would recommend. It's called There Is a Cure for Diabetes by Gabriel Cousens, who's C-O-U-S-E-N. I don't think it's C-O-U-S-E-N, Dr. Gabriel Cousens. And a lot of his material is available. You can even see some of his lectures on YouTube. You just look that up or Google Dr. Gabriel Cousens. But that one book I've read has a lot of the foundational information on health in general, and the way that the foods work in the body, and how we metabolize or fail to metabolize the foods that we eat, depending on whether it's live food or otherwise.
This is kind of coming full circle for me. I grew up in the Boston area, and a dear friend of mine was a nurse at the Hippocrates Institute, ran by Ann Whitmore.
Yes.
It was one of the first institutes, and they were not quite as gourmet, but I went in to visit a few times and was amazed at how tasty everything was. I thought, I'm not going to visit her. She kept asking me to come over for dinner. And people that, again, had chronic, very debilitating diseases, terminal, were being healed continually.
Yes.
So I do, and you brought it up again, ceremony, and I thought, oh, I guess it's coming up for a reason to be re-examined.
Dr. Cousins took, I think, seven ordinary Americans, and there's a DVD, a 30-minute DVD, seven ordinary Americans from all across the country, diabetics with heart disease. Some of them were on 17 different medications, very overweight. I mean, really in terrible, terrible health. So they went to his institute in Arizona, and for 30 days was on a raw foods diet. I think every single one of them got off all of their medication within the 30 days. And it is just
That's an amazing period.
There was only one man who left because he just couldn't handle it. He wanted to eat his food. But everybody else did an amazing job, and they were off all of their medication in 30 days.
Well, there's a caveat in that story, and that's the there was a couple of people that were diagnosed not with type 2 diabetes, but with type 1. So they were born with diabetes. You know, it's a congenital condition, and that's not expected. That's just not expected to be reversed. But you're saying it's just one of the cases. Okay, so anyway. The man that I'm talking about reduced his insulin considerably. Wasn't able to completely get off insulin, but reduced it considerably. And that's that was the only one person in that study that still had to take some medications. But there were people with high blood pressure. After the first week, they were reducing their medications. After at the end of the month, everyone except for this one case were completely off of their meds.
That's nearly unheard of. Well, it is, given what I've come across, and I just assume some of these illnesses are terminal, or I have made that assumption. And when you told me that you had healed from diabetes,
yeah,
I'm reminded
just an
again
amazing
of
thing.
Ann Whitmore's Institute.
Yeah, and Wigmore's Institute is still going very strong.
In
People
Florida,
go,
too.
Yeah.
I know. I hear bits in, I think, Southern California somewhere as well.
Exactly.
But I really, it's very generous and kind of you to share your experience of healing with others and to open up this knowledge.
Well,
to share it wildly.
In our healing practice at Three Trees.
He's a guinea pig, yes.
Sorry. In our healing practice at Three Trees, we have seen so many people come for spiritual healing who have been given like death sentences with stage 4 cancer, some serious, serious illnesses, and who have had amazing results with our spiritual healing. But I realized that I would like to be able to offer people even more. You know, between
it's
this
a quality of life,
exactly.
It's feeling well,
exactly, and things that they
having
can
the
do,
energy, the clarity of mind,
exactly, and things that they can do to help heal themselves,
yeah,
not just changing, you know, their thought patterns or changing their environment, or
that's all part of it.
It's all part of it,
but this is key because what we're, as you said, Jack, we're living intimately with our bodies and what we feed it. You
exactly.
see it in what in our environment when it's polluted, things come up dead. You know,
exactly.
What are we putting in?
Exactly.
You know, one before this is over, Jack, could you please play your flute? He has, I'm not sure what kind, but he's brought his flute, and I'm watching the clock. And now, what flute is this? It's beautiful.
Okay. This flute was made by a man named Guillermo Martinez. He's from the Majesca tribe down in near Oceanside. And he's a maker of sacred instruments. This is a double flute. He introduced it to me as the Mayan transitional flute. It's a flute with a drone and a just the regular flute that you see that has the you know, six or five holes in it. But they all go together, and I'd be happy to play a little for you.
Thank you, and I'd like to dedicate this song, the continuation of Three Trees in our land. ¶¶ you, Jack.
You're welcome.
That I had a healing last fall with Jack and Sequoia on their land, and the sound of the flute just allowed, how do I say it without words, it just gave a deep sense of inner peace and connectedness, rootedness. And I also felt like I was going up into the heavenly realms at the same time. You're sort of a conduit between both worlds. And do you bring that into the centers that you work in, your flute?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The singing bowls.
Yeah, I've got a cart full of instruments.
Yes, you do. I guess. It's one way of putting it. Well, thank you. My heart needed that.
Good. Well, you certainly
the cells.
Welcome. You're welcome.
You know, they just kind of reach out, and that's what happens with healthy food.
Well, thank you for all the good work that you do, Cindy. And
continually,
for years, getting the word out, and involving people in the discussions of so many topics that are so incredibly important to us today. We don't really.
Thank you.
Know what we don't know. And it's up to us to, it's up to people like you to raise the questions and to begin the dialogues so that we can begin to look beyond what our minds think we know.
Thank you. I have a very curious mind. Sometimes I start the dialogues and then I'm interested in something over there. So this show, if people ask me what it's about in interviews, what kind of interviews? Is it spiritual, political, musical? What are you doing? And I said, whatever feeds my heart that week.
Well, that's good. We should
that. I'm able to do that. And that's what I love about it. It satisfies my curiosity. I get to ask the questions and learn what I want to and invite people on that I've always wanted to, that have been fascinating, and spend the time doing it and talking to them beforehand about what they want to discuss.
Well, that's exciting.
I do this for selfish reasons, too. And I know I want people to understand what's going on in our world and what they can do about it. It's very important where they can jump in.
And for people who want to know more about Three Trees Retreat, the spiritual healing, the sound healing, and now raw foods, they can go to our website, threetreesretreat.com, and take your time. Read the pages. There's snippets of the music that Jack does during the sound healings and while I'm doing the energy healing. And all the raw food data will be online. It's not on there today, but it will be. And just give us a call at 831-768-7592. And if somebody needs some special attention or has a need to learn, you know, privately, or is in a health crisis and really wants to learn, give us a call and we'll be there to help too.
And I can honestly say that you bring the utmost integrity to the work that you do.
Thank you.
And you're absolutely welcome, and no stones are left unturned.
Thank you.
It's very quality, there's depth, a lot of insight.
We feel like we've been guided into this work, and that everything that we've done up until this point is still part of the journey. And adding this nutritional portion has been really an answer to a prayer for me, and it's exciting.
It certainly has.
Yeah.
The fear you must have experienced knowing that you had diabetes, and the satisfaction and joy in knowing that it's...
I didn't have a lot of fear because I didn't have a lot of knowledge. So what I looked at it
ignorance
as
is bliss.
Exactly. And I looked at it as a big opportunity. I thought that it was the biggest gift that was ever given to me to have that diagnosis, to be able to really look into taking care of myself and reversing it.
You turned it around.
Yeah, exactly.
And I just want to ask, I didn't ask this beforehand, why raw foods initially? Had you heard about its curative abilities?
No. Initially, it wasn't raw. I've gone through the gamut of every single thing out there. And different programs, different diets, different philosophies worked to a certain point with my body, and then it didn't work anymore. And I truly believed inside of myself there was another answer. I needed to delve further into finding out what really works and basing it on my own experience and knowledge, not what the American Diabetes Association says, not what the medical. Mm-hmm. And I support all of that. Yeah. And even people that come see us, we support where they are and what they're doing. You know, and so I just needed to go further because it just wasn't working for me.
I, too, have been out to Three Trees, and I asked for healings and being with Jack and Sequoia on the beautiful, beautiful land.
Closer.
And it is an amazing experience. The healings are in this lovely beautiful little building that Jack and Sequoia built themselves with this gorgeous view of these trees. And the special time that you have out there with them is very personalized and very deep. And now talking about raw foods, Sequoia, I'm so excited about this because it doesn't... You're making it sound friendly and doable, and I'm going to be out there doing some of these with you.
Yay.
I'm so excited. This is really,
we
really
both fun. Well.
I wish I would have brought food samples today.
Oh, yes.
We were too busy doing healing work this morning that I didn't have time to bring anything.
Well,
but
I'll be
next
in your
time.
Neighborhood tomorrow, so I'm taking a task.
Anyway, I urge the listeners to look at the website, and I've known these wonderful people for many years, and being reconnected again, no accident, with Janaea and Jack and Sequoia, is this very thrilling, amazing. So all three of these different cooking dates, they all three are very different, and they all seem like they're going to be lots and lots of fun and very educating.
And there's going to be more after those three.
Yay.
We're going to go through Italy, the Mediterranean. Mm. I mean, I make a hummus out of zucchini that tastes like garbanzo beans.
Will you be offering any kind of work study?
Maybe. I'll think about it. But yeah.
Chop.
Exactly.
When are you going on your next...
March 1st.
March 1st.
Yeah.
That's your second program.
Yeah. It will go into more about palate and flavors and recipe development, so I can do it all on my own, and also spa cuisine to make even less fat. So people who really need a different kind of diet we'll be able to do that, too. Oh, and my favorite, a week of pastry making. I am so exciting. I mean, excited.
What do they make? What are pastries made out of?
Nuts, a lot of nuts, cashews, walnuts, pecans, macadamia nuts, a cheesecake out of cashews that is just to live for, a vanilla cherry cheesecake with a carob pecan crust, I'm telling you.
And this is all healthy and nurturing.
Yeah. Will we know
rejuvenating.
How to shop for these things?
Yes. I will be providing
That's
shopping
key.
Lists, recipes, everything that you would need to know to leave the class and go home and cook. You will be provided with everything.
Great.
That's great. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, are there any parting words? Our next guests are not here yet, so we could play a little bit of music, or we could play something else. And if you want to stay a little bit longer, I you may have to. I think you said something about getting out of town. I don't know.
No.
But
the only thing that I would like to say is for people to... No, there is always an answer. And there's always hope. And there's always a way to reverse anything. And that if we just do our best and we walk through life with an open heart and a big smile, miracles happen all the time.
You're a testament to that. On your land,
on
what you've
land.
Created there.
Yeah.
And...
I just want to thank everybody that's stuck with us for this hour, listened patiently to our message, and just hope you know that we're speaking to you personally, and that it's a personal story for us, mm-hmm. and that it's more. This is so much more than a way for us to heal ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hand out to you as well, and we want to make a difference as much as we can. So this is
our invitation
to come and knock on our door. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jack.
Thank
you. It really is a personal story. Did you want to say something, Sandra? You look like you're...
I'm really happy about the reconnection with these people. And I talked to Sequoia after she'd gotten back, and we were so excited over the phone. She was, and... I feel that, again, as you are introducing this to your life and getting the response that you have physically, emotionally, spiritually, that obviously the body and as was waiting for it. Mm-hmm. And I feel as though it could be very good timing for myself as well.
Yeah, so it's exciting.
Yeah. And I like the way you really talk a lot about the taste.
Oh, that's the most important thing. I'm telling you, it has to taste good.
If Jack can give up cookies, I'm all for it, you know?
Yeah, I used to have to hide the cookies. He'd walk into the room and go, "Hi, I'm Jack. I'm a cookie-holic." I said, "I know, I have to put those away."
And he has.
Yeah, yeah.
He has something you never thought possible. Well, this has certainly been a lot of fun and very educational and informative and on many levels. Thank you so much. And we've been sharing with Sequoia and Jack, not Mike Cheney, learning about their journey. And it's led them to now a new way of eating and walking in the world. And that's through our vegetables, our raw vegetables and
fruit.
What a gourmet meals you can prepare. And if Sequoia can do it,
anybody can.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying she's been a gourmet cook, so she's really going to know what she's doing and relay that to the rest of us.
Yeah.
Instruct us. And now we're going to have Jack play. Would you like to play one last song and take us out here? Thank you. I'm asking him to play the flute. And then we'll give out your website once more and your phone number. Thank you so much. And soon we'll be talking with Langton Roberts about a local currency. But before we do that, we've got to get them hooked up here. We're going to play Stand By Me. That's Playing for Change. It's a song around the world.
This song says, no matter who you are, no matter where you go in your life, at some point you're going to need somebody to stand by you. Oh yeah. Oh my darling.
Whoops, I forgot my promise. I'm going to give you Jack and Sequoia's phone number and their website, and they can be reached at 768 7592. And their web address, this is for the classes and any healings, is 3treesretreat.com. Thank you. And now back to Stand By Me, Playing for Change.
You gonna need somebody to stand by you when the night has come and the land is dark and that moon is the only light we see. No, I won't be afraid. No, I won't shed one tear just as long as your people come and stand by me. And darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Oh, stand, stand,
stand by me.
Come on, stand by,
stand by me.
Liz is still tickling the belly of the beast from the heartland of Santa Cruz. And with me now, I'm real excited to have local resident Langdon Roberts and Stephanie Wynn. They have been working on creating a local currency that I understand is going to help Santa Cruz residents save money on health care, as well as locally grown food. We're going to be talking about how this is going to come about, and it's better than bartering, and you'll be able to support local sustainable business practices, expose your business to new markets without spending lots of cash. Anyone can participate. You don't even have to own a business. And they're basically here to promote the physical and economic health of Santa Cruz County, and they'll be talking with you about that. And welcome, Langdon.
Thank you, Cynthia.
It's great to have you here.
It's great to be here.
Stephanie Wynn, she just arrived. She's been a volunteer at New Earth Exchange, and she's looking for, there it is, her microphone. Thank you, Stephanie, for coming on as well.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you. And I'm just going to give you a little bit of background information on Langdon. He grew up in Nevada City, and he moved to the Bay Area at the age of 17, and you worked in your father's antique business there. Mm-hmm. And then at 21, he was inspired to study the nature of human consciousness. Me too.
Yes.
We'll have to have you on for that.
Oh, yeah.
And then after 7 years of college, 4 majors, and a year off to study massage therapy, you got your BS in biology at CSU Hayward. Then you started a PhD program in neuroscience. Was that at Brown University?
Yeah, it was at Brown.
Can't read my writing. And then 4 years, you began neuromassage, which incorporates biofeedback to train the nervous system to reverse states of chronic pain and anxiety. Definitely want to have you on again. And then in 2004, after 9 years in New England, that's where I from, very cold, you moved to Santa Cruz. You wanted to leave the snow, which always felt like home. Santa Cruz always felt like home.
Yeah.
And then after about four years ago, working 2 years in a doctor's office, and you were observing your insurance payments dwindle down to nearly nothing as insurance companies became more creative in denying useful severances. Yeah. So that's what gave you the idea to...
Yeah, to open my own center that would be affordable.
Yes. And then, Stephanie, welcome. You also work in the office.
Yes.
And what do you do there exactly?
Oh, I do administrative work, setting appointments and keeping bookkeeping records and so on.
But you're instrumental in working with creating the new currency.
Oh, that's right. New Earth Exchange, of course. I do all sorts
that's
of
why
things
we're here today.
Well, actually,
it's good to have you both here.
New Earth Exchange doesn't have our own office, so I was getting confused with something else. But I go flyering. I participate in meetings and brainstorming ideas for how the whole structure can work.
It's a lot of work because I was just explaining to Langdon that I've had a lot of what I call radical economists on, and I've often thought the answer is a local currency. Then I read an article, I guess about 3 months ago, in the Good Times about what you were creating. Why don't we get started with that?
Oh, definitely.
Let's go.
About it. Yeah, so New Earth Exchange is a local currency movement, but it's really more than that. It's an effort to create a truly sustainable and just economy here in Santa Cruz County. Mm-hmm. And a big part of it is the currency. We want to decouple as much of our commerce as possible from the federal currency system, which is not really designed to be fair and sustainable in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And we also...
Well said. You summarized that neatly.
And we're also a mutual support network. So the idea is we make it really easy for people to find out who is practicing sustainable business via the internet and make it economically advantageous to spend our money at the people who are doing what we think they should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a number of attempts at local currency in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
But the difference between that and Newark Exchange is now we have the power of the internet, and there's new technologies coming out all the time that allow us to do things like, you know, go online or even use our iPhone to find out where's the closest place I can buy an organic bread or, you know, a loaf of bread or, you know, who can fix my leaky roof who has a commitment to sustainability. And we can even get a rank order of people.
I was going to say grading them somehow.
Grading in price, in environmental responsibility, in social justice, and find out who takes the local currency and who's the closest to my house. It's all there. It's all possible. So we're working to make it really easy to
be as find those resources. And what I like about the idea behind your currency is that you're supporting healthcare, true health,
right,
as well as healthy eating, food supply, which we need to survive, food supply.
Right. Yeah, we have a special class of currency that is designed to enter the system through the healthcare system or the local food system. And if you use this currency, you save more than if you use the standard currency. So,
how is that?
Well, the currency it can be traded just like, you know, any other currency. So it can be issued. So we control the money supply based on, you know, what is needed. You know, unlike the Federal Reserve, which controls the money supply based on profits,
right,
which
they
is
hold
discussion.
It or they just give it away,
right,
practically.
Right. So if we issue currency, we can make it available, say, for 80 cents on the dollar or 85 cents on the dollar, and we can make the currency less expensive if you buy what we call unvalidated currency, which has to go first to a local healthcare provider or a local food provider before, and then it gets stamped and then it goes into general circulation. So we can specifically target the financial sectors that are struggling and need our help by creating special currencies that are designed to be used there first. But in general, we want to support all businesses who have a basic commitment towards becoming more sustainable.
I know it's scary to think that we have so much dependence on the federal currency and the control that they have, and they're just ruining communities. And this is one way of taking that control back.
That's right. Yeah, we're you know, a very grassroots-based nonprofit organization, you know, designed entirely to help the economic health of Santa Cruz County.
And I was reading in your website and also the article in the Good Times about the populations that will be served, and it's
right,
also the more destitute, lower income, the veterans.
Yes. Yeah. People who don't have health insurance, people who are unemployed or underemployed, will find it easy to use New Earth Exchange to generate income. So if you don't have a job, but you do know how to fix a car or, you know, or cook a wonderful meal or take care of a child, right, you can put your profile up on New Earth Exchange and advertise that you are taking 25%, 50%, whatever percent of your fee in local currency. Right? And we make it easy for people to find you.
That would all be on the website.
Yeah, it's all on the website. So that is in development right now. Where we are right now is we have what's called a Ning site, which is kind of like Facebook. It allows you to make a basic profile, to list what you have available, and to post classified ads. And that's all free right at the moment.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a big start.
Yeah, it's a pretty good start. This morning we had 43 people signed up with
great,
a huge variety of offerings on there.
Have you started printing them yet?
No, that's one of the things we're waiting for is to generate some funding so that we can print the actual currency. So right now what we're doing is just trying to support each other's businesses and, mm-hmm. and network, get to know each other. Mm-hmm. This is a very new organization. And the other thing that we're going to implement soon is a discount network so that even people who aren't able to take the currency or don't want to take the currency can still participate by offering some type of economic incentive. And that would make sense for mostly for larger businesses who have complex bookkeeping systems or who mm-hmm. have a large number of sales per day. Mm-hmm. They may not necessarily be geared up to deal with a local currency, but they can certainly offer a small discount to people who show a commitment to sustainable business practices. Yeah.
And then I just, either one of you can address this. Let me get your microphone set up here. Oh, you've got it, Stephanie. Good. I was wondering. I didn't see it up there. What are some of the other benefits? I know it's keeping the money here locally, and it's not going out to larger corporations elsewhere. Can you say a little bit more about that, either one of you?
Sure. So when you go to a chain store to buy anything, around 15% of that money stays local and the rest of it goes away. Mm-hmm. Eventually ends up, in the hands of the multinationals, not here in our community. Mm-hmm. Right? If you go to a locally owned business, it's better, but still over half of the money that you spend, even at a locally owned business, ends up going away. So the idea of shopping local is wonderful. Yeah, I mean, most people don't realize this. Even if you shop locally, if you're using the U.S. dollar, well, if you think about it, most businesses purchase the vast majority of their goods from some corporation that ultimately is making stuff in China, right?
And I personally don't want to be supporting China.
Yeah, it's so it's not always easy to tell when you're being economically responsible. So that's one of the goals of our organization is to make it easy for people to find out. Mm-hmm. And we don't really expect that people are going to immediately be able to do sustainable business practices. It's actually very difficult to live a sustainable life. Our society just isn't set up for it.
And it will be an evolving. It's a matter of what's in place, and it will take time to transition.
That's right. Yeah, what we ask of people is to simply be transparent. Tell us what's really going on in your uh-huh. life. What are you doing right now to try to be more sustainable? What would you like to be doing in the future?
And what's worked for you?
What's worked, and how can your community help you to move towards sustainability?
I really want to thank you for doing this work, both of you. It's a lot, and yet it's serving so many of us.
Yes, it is. It is a lot of work.
It's ensuring our future, and it is.
Yeah, but it's a labor of love. Yeah,
we
really enjoy what we do. Without the passion for it, we wouldn't keep going, because so far it's all just self-funded. We're trying to raise about $5,000 so we can actually print the currency and get going
as soon as possible. It sounds like a lot, but it really isn't. If people get together, have small fundraisers.
Yeah, that's right.
And initially.
Exactly.
Or even donate.
They could donate. That's wonderful. We're very happy to accept donations. And the other thing that people can do is simply go to the site and sign up, because what we intend to do is as soon as we have 200 people, mm-hmm. We can initiate the currency production by simply charging each person a $20 annual membership fee.
That's nothing.
In U.S. dollars. For that, they'll get $30 in local currency. That'll raise $4,000, which is enough to print a single denomination of currency, which is just as difficult to counterfeit as the U.S. dollar.
Yeah.
So that's our next step, is to get get to that magic number of 200 committed people. And from there, it all just works.
And then more people are employed in doing what they want as well.
Yeah.
They're getting advertising. They're listing themselves on the website.
That's right.
Stephanie, you look like you want to chime in over there.
Yeah, well, a few minutes ago, you asked the question of what are the benefits of keeping currency local?
Yes.
And I wanted to address that from an environmental standpoint. Of course, we want to support our friends and neighbors, but beyond that, we all recognize the dangers of climate change, and we need to do everything we can to slow it down. One of the biggest things we can do is shift the way that we do commerce. So currently, California exports billions and billions of dollars worth of produce annually, and we import the same things that we ship out. You know, olives to and from Italy, almonds to and from the Mediterranean. And it's very easy to forget that we're doing this because we don't always check product labels to see where did this come from, where was it processed, if it was processed, where was it packaged, how many places has this been before it's reached me, and we don't think about the carbon costs of that and how that's affecting the greater scheme of things. But when we have a currency system set up to favor local trade and set up to favor buying directly or close to directly from local farmers, we're cutting out a lot of the invisible pollution, the global warming pollution that we often don't think about in our day-to-day lives.
Yeah, and we're eating a lot better, and we're taking care of one another.
That's the whole idea.
Exactly, and we're taking care of the planet at the same time. I call the mother. Mm-hmm. You know, she's being nurtured and giving to us. We're giving back. It has broad reaches, tentacles reach out far. And historically, local currencies were in effect during the Depression. So this isn't new. But you have an added element to it.
Right. It's not new at all. You know, during the Depression, after World War II, many European countries initiated local currencies. There's been ongoing local currency in Switzerland called Vire, which is still going. It runs as an electronic virtual currency, doing over $2 billion a year in transactions. And 20% of the businesses in Switzerland are members. So it's not it's not new, and it's not necessarily just small time. Yeah.
And then I read about the Berkshire currency on the website and the others, Ithaca. I don't know
Ithaca
if there's
hours,
still.
Calgary dollars. You know, we have one in Humboldt. We've got there are about 2,500 across the world currently functioning.
So we can benefit from what's already happened, what's already in action.
Yes, the longest running successful currency in this country is the Ithaca Hours, and we're modeling our system very much after theirs, with some additions. Upgraded search capacities and with the mutual discount network. And we're also thinking about sustainability for our own organization. So one of the most challenging issues that currencies face is volunteer burnout. A lot of currencies get started, people are really excited about it, and then the people running it are, 3, 4, 5 years. You just run out of energy. You've got to keep it in the forefront. You have to keep it growing. So we intend to eventually have a paid staff so that our workers can be paid a living wage as well. So we have very easy systems that are designed in order to generate enough money to keep us going so that we can gradually build. Eventually, we anticipate we should be able to get 20% of the people in the county involved, if not more. As people learn that you really can support your local economy and save money at the same time, there's really no downside to being
and
a member.
Really, who doesn't want that? I think it's just the exposure.
Yeah, it's the exposure, and it's just
the time. A lot of people are busy. They don't quite understand it. Oh, a local currency. What else can I do with it? What if I'm stuck with something? But you've looked at all of those.
We've addressed those issues, actually. What you can do with it, where you can spend it. What if you get too much? That's all built in into the system.
You fine-tuned it.
Yeah, well,
from the experience of others.
From the experience of others, and it will evolve.
Reinventing the wheel, it will. Yeah. And one question, I know, is it legal?
Yeah. Yes, it's legal. It's funny. I was on another radio station, and the guest right after me was an economist who said, "Well, the host asked him about the currency, and he said, "Well, would you use this?" And he said, "No, it's not legal." And that's a common misconception. Yes, it is, in fact, legal to print your own currency. What is not legal is to create something that you present as legal tender. So what we're creating is called a fiat currency. That means it can be accepted at will. We cannot require anybody to accept it. So the U.S. dollar says this note is legal tender. Our notes are not legal tender. Mm-hmm. That's the difference. That's what makes it legal.
But it's based on the U.S. dollar.
Well, at this point, it's based on the U.S. dollar, but it's not backed by the U.S. dollar. So there are two basic classes of currency. There are backed currencies like the Berkshire and unbacked currencies like the Ithaca Hour. Right? For a backed currency, now backed currencies are also legal. I talked with the people at Ithaca. In Berkshires, they have lawyers. They've checked into all this. It is entirely legal as long as you encourage people to pay their taxes. That is the one thing that will get you in trouble is if you start thinking of this as, oh, this isn't U.S. currency, I don't have to pay my taxes. Well, no, that'll get you in trouble because whether it's a U.S. Dollar or not, you still have to pay taxes on the value that you receive for it. So that keeps it legal. As an unbacked currency, we have a lot more flexibility in that we can, like Ithaca and Calgary, we can print currency in small amounts to create microloans for people who are going to do something that the community really needs. So we're not limited to the amount of U.S. cash that we have deposited in a bank someplace.
Now, how would banks participate? Local banks at all? Would they be exchanging the currency? Or
well, they certainly could. If they wanted to get involved, we would very much welcome that. And a way that they could get involved is to have special accounts that people could use to deposit their currency. They could also become exchange sites for the currency, just like other foreign currencies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, exchange rate.
Yeah, and we're even working on electronic debit card type of technology, which actually exists right now to allow multiple types of currency. So you could have a debit card that would automatically debit your account a certain amount in U.S. dollars and a certain amount in Santa Cruz cash, depending on what percentage of local currency was accepted by that particular business. So there's really incredible stuff out there in the hardware and the software that could be implemented, and the banks could certainly help with that.
Why not use it?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Makes it a lot more accessible. I like the idea of loaning money out in the currency. Could you say a little bit more about that?
Sure. Lending is a wonderful way to support the creation of new business, especially businesses that are really needed in the county. It's a way to create more pressure to actually use the currency, because if we give a loan of 500, you know, local dollars to a business, they're going to want to use it, and mm-hmm. so they're going to say, okay, well, okay, who can I spend this with? So it's a way to get things rolling, but you know, it's also a new way of looking at lending. So we don't believe in using interest at all. Mm-hmm. That's interest is one of the main things that destabilizes the U.S. economy.
And debt.
Yeah. Interest and debt. Yeah. So what we want to do...
That's why I asked you. I was curious to see how that would operate or what you have in mind.
Right. So when we lend money to a business, we have an investment in making sure that that business does well. So
sure.
we lend with a stipulation that the business, you know, accept a certain percentage of business in the local currency, and then we help promote that business, mm-hmm. you know, by you know giving them you know an easier. Easier profile to find on the website because they're mm-hmm. offering a higher percentage. So we really want to encourage businesses to take as much of the currency as possible. So mm-hmm. You know if there is an industry that we really think needs to be here, we want to support it. And so we have the member base. Not that we're going to do massive advertising, but mm-hmm. just make it a little bit easier for that business mm-hmm. to get going and say, hey, this is here now. Mm-hmm. You know, we have an organic dairy, mm-hmm. you know, in Santa Cruz County or whatever it is.
Something that would be of real value is probably where you lend the money. What would you be looking for in different companies or individuals that wanted to produce something that is of value?
Right. You know, anything that isn't made locally already, like we don't have a meat packing plant, for example. You know, if somebody mm-hmm. wants to start something that would require, otherwise having a ship something from, far mm-hmm. away, that gets highest priority. The other things that get high priority is whatever the community needs. Like, if we need more electricians and somebody is an electrician, well, we're certainly happy, mm-hmm. to help, get them started. That type of thing. And so it's based on input from our members. Whatever members say they want that does not exist yet in the network, that's mm-hmm. who we seek out and offer them incentives to join.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, you've been thinking this through very carefully and thoroughly.
Yeah, for about 2 years, been researching all the options. Started looking at barter networks. Very quickly realized that running a barter network is a very dangerous thing to do because
it's not very stable. There's nothing to really. Look at the currency and make it fair. There is no currency. It's hard. There's nothing backing it.
There's that issue, but even worse, it puts you at risk. There are federal laws that will fine you thousands of dollars per incident if somebody does a transaction that you broker via a barter exchange, and there is no 1099 form filed for tax purposes.
Oh my.
So if we ran a barter organization, we'd be responsible to make sure every single transaction gets reported. And people don't really want to do that if they're buying locally raised carrots.
All right, all of you out there that continue to barter, and keep it between yourselves.
Right.
A lot of it.
Yeah, I mean, people don't really get in trouble for direct
organized.
Barter. But if you run a barter exchange, mm-hmm. then there are very successful barter exchanges out there, but it's all between businesses, usually medium to large size businesses, who do very well in mm-hmm. barter networks, and the barter networks make money because they take a percentage of each transaction. But that's not what we want to do. We're interested in the common person
and giving back.
Yeah.
And working locally to improve our economy and not collapse with the rest of our nation. Yeah. So how did you get started? Basically, because you saw that the insurance was not reimbursing your patients as much. Usually they were finding creative ways of avoiding payment.
Yeah. Right. So that's why we started the center, the biofeedback center in SoCal Village. But, it was more than that. We just started, having people come in and saying, you know what, I really need your help, mm-hmm. But I don't have any money. And it got worse and worse. About 2 years ago, the economy crashed, basically. Call it whatever you want. As far as we're concerned, it was a pretty serious crash. I mean, our business went down to about 50% of what it was before, as did many. And we're actually coming back. We're doing pretty well. But we're seeing a lot of our fellow practitioners, go out of business. People are leaving the county just because they can't make a living.
And this really is a way to keep our economy going.
Yeah, it keeps it.
It's worked in many other communities.
Yes,
and it can work here.
Absolutely.
And what is your website? Just get that out now.
Yeah. NewEarthExchange.org. That's where you go to sign up to get all the information that you want. And if you feel like you're ready to jump in and join the community.
Get involved.
Yeah.
What are your ideas, too?
Yeah. If you want to go ahead and sign up, definitely go to the NewEarthExchange.org because that's what puts you on our mailing list and gives us easy ways to contact you. But also go to NewEarthExchange.ning, that's NING.com. Mm-hmm. And there you can immediately make your own profile and start promoting your goods or services.
A lot of information out there.
Yeah.
There really is. And Stephanie, what exactly are you doing with... Can you say a little bit more about that?
Well, at this point, a lot of it's just brainstorming and meeting and orchestrating. I mean, my role is really as a helper in this project.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've seen a lot and learned a lot. And
Stephanie
a lot of passion for it.
Stephanie helps with a lot of the writing and the environmental research. Her background in environmental science helps a lot.
Wonderful. That's key.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what else? Let's see here. In what other ways are you, just so you're not reinventing the wheel, are you in contact with other alternative currencies, the communities?
Yes. In fact, 2 days ago, I was at a meeting of the Bay Area Community Exchange, which is a nonprofit whose mission is to support the development of local currencies in the Bay Area. They've been around for about a year. And we listened to a presentation from somebody who is creating a local currency up in Sonoma. And
there's a lot right around here.
There are a lot right around here. In fact, next month we're heading up to San Francisco to present New Earth Exchange. And the idea is it's a roundtable brainstorming meeting so that we can benefit from everybody else's
and support
experience.
One another too.
Exactly. Support each other, help each other with technologies, new ideas.
Maybe exchange currencies in the future as well. And businesses. If someone is traveling and wants to use their currency locally, that might be a possibility.
Yeah, we've talked quite a bit about that, how to make this replicable. So we're very concerned with Santa Cruz County, but we're also concerned, about the region and the world, because ultimately we need to move towards sustainable economies everywhere. Mm-hmm. So we intend for this to become a model of how a local community can very quickly, improve its economic status and help educate the local public, on how to easily do sustainable commerce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is possible.
It is. I do believe that it's possible. Now, with the level of awareness that we have about the need for environmental responsibility and the internet technology, for the very first time, it can actually happen.
Yeah. It has happened in the past, but I think it's been more patchwork.
Right. What I mean for the very first time is it can become a large-scale movement, and mm-hmm. we can actually take a step in the right direction in the move towards an environmentally responsible and economically just mm-hmm. economic system.
Economically just, and I love the fact that you're including those that don't have the resources right now, so that sounds like everyone's going to be included in this and be taken care of as well, and find ways to do something of value, to give back.
That's right. Everybody has something.
Instead of just taking.
They can offer.
Feel good.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You know, for example, my partner, Daz, who helped me create the New Earth Exchange, you know, talks about her mother, who, you know, is, has, you know, Alzheimer's and has.
I just had someone on. I work with hospice, so I see that a lot.
So she can't necessarily remember your name, but she can hold a baby and put her to sleep. Mm-hmm. You know, there's everybody mm-hmm. has something
everybody.
That they can contribute.
Yeah. It's that recognition. It's not excluding anyone because they don't have a job at this point or a resource or their income has been dramatically cut.
Right. And that's so many of us. The statistics on...
Through no fault of our own, it was just an economic collapse.
Well, exactly. But, I mean, it wasn't just an economic collapse. It was an inevitable result of the design of the system.
Yeah.
Because the more... Two years ago, I knew nothing about how this system worked. And now, you know, I look at it, you know, if you do the simple math, it becomes very evident that these periodic crashes are unavoidable, and they're going to get worse.
They're unavoidable given the system that we have now.
Given
the system,
that's right.
With the Federal Reserve.
That's right.
If we didn't have a Federal Reserve and a currency that truly worked for the people, we wouldn't be having these dips.
Yes, a currency that was based on value rather than on debt could be stable.
Value rather than on debt. Well said.
Thank you.
Did you want to say something, Stephanie? I thought.
Yeah, I was just going to point out how the current system is based on debt. I mean, that's how the whole Federal Reserve started.
Yes.
And it's also based on a globalized system.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're sort of at risk of whatever's going on a larger scale, rather than having those networks within our community like we used to have thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
We used to be able to do everything locally.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were maybe affected by the same weather patterns as people around the world, but that was about it. So we have a lot of resources locally. We have a lot of really creative people. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of farmers, a lot of healthcare practitioners. And we're just trying to
agricultural
facilitate.
Belt.
Right. We've got some really great opportunities here. And we just like to make it easier for people in this area to get what they need and to offer what they can do.
Yeah.
And it just kind of came to a bit of a grinding halt. And you're jump-starting it again.
Yeah.
With the local. We do. I thought the same thing. I thought, you know, we have a lot of talented people here, and suddenly they're not able to survive with their skill. The money flow has stopped. They're suddenly in debt. They're not being paid for what they do so well. What happened? Yeah. So I started bringing a lot of economists on, trying to find out, and you are my missing piece, a local currency.
Local currency. Yeah, well, I mean, I see that in my practice all the time. The people who...
You really do.
Yeah, because I have clients that, you know, started a couple years ago that, you know, all of a sudden their income is virtually nothing. Or, you know, the people who come in now... you know, have very different stories than people who came in 3 years ago.
Mm.
You know, as far as, you know, what they can afford, and they're worried, and, you know, the worst of the
stress
of the worry seems to be
impacts their health too.
Exactly. You know, so people need the service more than ever, but fewer people can actually afford to do it. So we're working on ways of creating, you know, lower cost biofeedback sessions, you know, classes. We have a number of ultra low income slots that we have a waiting list for.
That you probably didn't even have a need for before this.
Not so much, no.
Now, and you, of course, have to survive, so you have to get paid something.
Right.
And this will hopefully allow the flow for yourself and many, and all of us, actually.
Yes, hopefully. I mean, one of the things that we can do is, you know, even before we manage to bring the currency, is support those businesses that we know are supporting others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, find out what your friends do. And you know, help them. You know, that's what this is all about.
I think in your search of different options to jumpstart our economy, creating a currency, an alternative currency, is by far the most logical and beneficial. And you've really done your homework in doing this. And I really want to invite you all to look at his website.
NewEarthExchange.org. Or newearthexchange.ning.com.
Now, is there a phone number they can call to?
They can call us at the Center for Transformational Neurophysiology. That's the only phone number we have right now, which it's doubling as the New Earth Exchange office. And that number is 464-1419. That's the 831 area code.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And once more, how can they support you in this? Jump in and help.
Well, one thing that I haven't mentioned yet is that we are in need of programmers, especially if you know how to do CSS, cascading style sheets programming, to, you know, take our Ning site to the next level, or if you are a programmer of any sort and want to get involved, we need you, because it costs a lot of money to build a good website, and we need a very high-quality website. You can donate your time or money. We already have 15 volunteers that we are scrambling to organize and you know, figure out exactly what we need. You can tell everybody you know about New Earth Exchange and the local currency, especially businesses. Start asking businesses, do you take the local currency? Do you know that this is happening? And most importantly, go onto the website and sign up and help us get to that magic number of 200 people so we can print the currency and get this moving along.
I don't think it will take much time once people understand the value and that it is perfectly legal. They don't have to fear the IRS coming down their door.
That's right. There's nothing to worry about. they're not going to mess with us. There is a law that says that we're not allowed to compete with the federal currency. So if we ever get that big, well, okay, maybe.
Well, the Berkshires have done quite well, and it's...
Yeah, if the Berkshires, you know, they do a couple million dollars a year in commerce, and the government doesn't bother them. So I think we have to get pretty darn big to make anybody worry about us.
So the website, once more, I'm going to have to put on the news.
NewEarthExchange.org.
Great. And I encourage all of you to check it out. This may just be the answer to saving our community. In a way that is sustainable and works for all of us.
Certainly hope so. Thank you, Cynthia.
You're welcome.
And the other thing to do again is go to that Ning site, newearthexchange.ning.com, if you feel like you're ready to jump in and start offering your services. Because the biggest thing we need right now is just for people to start offering their services. We have a lot of healthcare providers.
We do.
We have, you know, gardening, local gardening. We have people involved already who are looking for others to trade services with at a discounted rate, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And so you can get involved that way.
Thank you both so much, and for all that you're doing. And I know the work that's involved, but I can just imagine. You know, I'm busy.
Oh, if I can put in a plug before
the
end. On Monday, March 8th, one of the things I do is astrology. That's one of the things I have available for trade that I'm hoping New Earth Exchange can facilitate. So on Monday, March 8th at 7 p.m., I'm hosting a workshop called Astrology for Dummies. and I'm willing to go sliding scale or trade on that one. So if you're interested in learning more about astrology and you don't have a lot of cash, you want to talk to me about how you can attend that workshop, go ahead and give me a call at 831-419-9518. That's 419-9518, Astrology for Dummies.
And one more thing.
Astrology for Dummies, sure.
One more thing. We have a general meeting coming up on March 1st. If you have not participated with us before, we'll have an informational session at 6 o'clock and general meeting at 6:30. So please show up and please feel free to call with any questions, 831-464-1419.
Thank you so much. And I'd like to know more about your astrology. And I want to have an astrologer on, a whole show on astrology. Thank you both so much.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you. And all that you've done.
Now we're going to play Lakesh. And it looks like we don't have Palestinian news, so we'll have free speech news coming right up.
A dragon's eye, but light like a feather. And way across the horizon, deep in the hills, thunder is coming, echoing valley. An elven king, gentle, his master moves in robes of wind. And the poet on your breath, sweeter than peaches, bitter as grandfather time, may slip past you in a rhythm and shadow. But it's received between the lines. Liddy, 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 hey, ahoka, hey. Liddy, 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 yeah. Ring them bells, child. Ring them bells, child. Ring them bells, child. Because there's no place like home.
This is Free Speech Radio News for Thursday, February 18th, 2010. In New York, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up on today's newscast, the state of Louisiana is suing all of its death row inmates after one prisoner filed a lawsuit challenging execution guidelines.
It's pretty upsetting. Attorneys around the country that have done this, worked on death penalty cases, we've never seen it anywhere in any state.
Obama orders a new commission to look at the rising national debt. And we'll go to Argentina, where a rash of police violence against youth has residents protesting. Those stories and more, but first, this news.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for Free Speech Radio News. A small airplane has crash-landed into an IRS building in Austin, Texas. Although the cause of the crash is still under investigation, it appears the plane was intentionally flown into the side of the federal office building around mid-morning. Fire crews battled the resulting blaze. Early reports say two people in the building were injured and one person is still missing. Federal officials say they believe the plane belonged to Joseph Andrew Stack. Before the man took off from a North Austin airport, he set his house on fire and left a suicide note online. The note is an anti-tax, anti-government, anti-big business manifesto that ends with, quote, "Well, Mr. Big Brother, IRS man, let's try something different. Take my pound of flesh and sleep well." Stack died in the crash. Speaking to reporters, Texas Governor Rick Perry discussed the need to balance security and liberty.
I hope we don't turn our capital into DFW or Bush International Airport from the standpoint of security, that Texans still and visitors still have freedom to come and go and don't feel like that they're being, you know, inappropriately happy.